place that I can call my home? Is it mine? Oh Lord, is it mine? You know I get so weary from the battles in this life. There's many times it seems that you're the only hope inside. Is it mine? Oh Lord, is it mine? When everything's dark and nothing seems right, I never cease to wonder at the cruelty of this land, but it seems a time of sadness is a time to understand. Is it mine? Oh Lord, is it mine? When everything's dark and nothing seems right, you don't have to win, and there's no need to fight.
Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, May 15th, 2023. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. That's plural, questions. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of a website of which the proceeds go to support MLA's effort to save our republic. You can also support us by purchasing the books Government by Consent and Court Access and the Common Law, also found on the right-hand side of our website. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more, or click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. And everyone should be involved in our campaign for constitutional sheriffs. You can find that on our right side and also on the front page. Tonight's scripture reading is the first epistle of John, picking up where we left off last week. It's chapter 3. So, first epistle of John, chapter 3, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 3. Behold, what manner of love the Father hath bestowed upon us, that we should be called the sons of God. Therefore the world knoweth us not, because it knew him not. Beloved, Now are we the sons of God, and it doth not yet appear what we shall be. But we know that when he shall appear, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is. And every man that hath this hope in him purifieth himself, even as he is pure. Whosoever committeth sin transgresseth also the law, for sin is the transgression of the law. And ye know that he was manifested to take away our sins, and in him is no sin. Whosoever abideth in him sinneth not. Whosoever sinneth hath not seen him, neither known him. Little children, let no man deceive you. He that doeth righteousness is righteous, even as he is righteous. He that committeth sin is of the devil, for the devil sinneth from the beginning. For this purpose the Son of God was manifested, that he might destroy the works of the devil. Whosoever is born of God doth not commit sin, for his seed remaineth in him. And he cannot sin, because he is born of God. In this the children of God are manifest, and the children of the devil. Whosoever doeth not righteousness is not of God, neither he that loveth not his brother. For this is the message that ye heard from the beginning, that we should love one another. Not as Cain, who was of that wicked one, and slew his brother. And wherefore slew he him? Because his own works were evil, and his brother's righteous. Marvel not, my brethren, if the world hate you. We know that we have passed from death unto life, because we love the brethren. He that loveth not his brother abideth in death. Whosoever hateth his brother is a murderer. And ye know that no murderer hath eternal life abiding in him. Hereby perceive we the love of God, because he laid down his life for us. And we ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. But whoso hath this world's good, and seeth his brother have need, and shutteth up his bowels of compassion from him, how dwelleth the love of God in him? My little children, let us not love in word, neither in tongue, but in deed and in truth. And hereby we know that we are of the truth, and shall assure our hearts before him. For if our heart condemn us, God is greater than our heart, and knoweth all things. Beloved, if our heart condemn us not, then have we confidence toward God. And whatsoever we ask, we receive of him, because we keep his commandments, and do those things that are pleasing in his sight. And this is his commandment, that we should believe on the name of his Son Jesus Christ, and love one another as he gave us commandment. And he that keepeth his commandments dwelleth in him, and he in him. And hereby we know that he abideth in us, by the Spirit which he hath given us.
Okay, I guess we'll look for announcements. Well, before we do that, when we wrote some information, wrote a handbook on creating committees of safety, one of the ways we strongly suggested that they grow is that everyone bring a guest. Every meeting, someone bring somebody, bring two people. Well, that's another way that we can grow here. We do have to grow. We have to hit that critical mass, and we are kind of working on that, but we're still organizing, really trying to reorganize ourselves in a certain way in order to potentially maybe get some funding from different individuals or corporations or whatever. But anyway, we still have to grow. And once we get out there and get enough people, get some interviews to some large groups, I think that's when we're going to start to hit that critical mass. We're poised for that right now. We've got over 10,700 members at this point. Of course, they're not all active, but that's pretty much the way it is in any kind of a group situation. But hopefully we'll be able to wake a lot of them up. We have a plan to potentially do that, to those who are sleeping. But we do need new people coming in. So I want to encourage everyone, if you see what we're doing is worthwhile, and I do know that what we are doing is very worthwhile. I don't know that there's any other plan to save the nation other than the NLA plan, which is really our founding fathers' plan. There's nothing else out there. You know, we know that Trump's doing some work to do what he's got to do in the military, and they're working on giving the nation back to the people. But the people have to receive it. And the sad truth is the people are incapable of receiving it because they've never learned. They've been dumbed down. We're all ignorant. I speak to myself first, and I decided to get educated, to come to an understanding. And I do believe that many of the people who come to NLA here, especially the active people, have the same thing. They're trying to get rid of their ignorance through knowledge. And, you know, we have to really bring the message out to the mass. And we need, I think we need a good maybe 100, 150,000 people really involved to really get the job done. So we have a lot of work before us, but it can be done quickly if people just start sharing, and those who see will get active. You know, the best thing to do is to lead them to our front page, share National Liberty Alliance with people, and look at the seminar that we put together here, which we gave back in December 18, 2021. Have them watch that seminar, because in that seminar is the whole plan, NLA's plan. And it's about, it's almost 4 hours long. Well, it's a few minutes short of 4 hours. So it's quite long. But we covered everything in this. I mean, if people generally come look at our front page, read our front page, and watch the videos, it takes a little while to do that because most people aren't going to sit down this long to look at all these things. But we have a lot of information on our front page. Anybody wants to know who we are, what we're doing, it's all on that front page. Everything else after that is an education and a process to save this republic, to reinstate the republic, to resurrect the republic. And I know I've said this often, and I could tell you just today, and this is every single day, it's just like every time I hear it, I know, and I make a count. Three times already I heard people refer to us as a republic, and zero times, I mean, I'm sorry, as a democracy, but zero times as a republic. And that's pretty much every day. I hear that every single day. I watch the news, I watch documentaries, I conversations, and throughout the day, numerous times, I hear it. And if people become conscious of that and start to realize and make a note of how many times they hear people calling us a democracy, that's how sunk into the brains of the American people to work with the enemy to destroy the republic that we are. And it's going to take some work to re-educate people, to bring them up to the realization of who we are as a people, what we should be as a people. You know, our heritage is in the law. And if you don't know the law, you can't know your heritage. Neither can you preserve it or protect it or defend it. You have to know it to defend it. And you have to know the law in order to realize when those people we've elected are not obeying the law. These judges that are in courts that are not obeying the law. So anyway, I'd like to encourage everyone to bring guests, get them involved with National Liberty Alliance. That's the best way to really get people because you become the welcoming committee. You know, we have a welcoming committee working, but it's only one or two people. I'm not even sure how active they are right now, and hopefully we're going to have a few other people working on that. I'm going to sit down and spend some time with them and train them on exactly, you know, how to welcome people, what do we want to cover, and how do we get people excited, and how to follow up with that. And anybody who wants to volunteer to work with us on that, just get a hold of Jan at nationallibertyalliance.org and let them know you're interested in volunteering for that or some other thing. But you become the best welcoming committee because the people who are active and listening and know what we're talking about, hearing the things that we're teaching, finding out what our founding fathers said and how they formed this great nation, what common law really is, how serious the problem is in the courts and how we can fix the courts and how we can take control and actually have government by consent. Because, again, people have no clue whatsoever, zero clue on how to have government by consent, none. But, again, everybody here coming here, you're getting an education, you're learning, and you can become the best welcoming committee by sharing NLA with someone and telling them, hey, come listen to the, go watch the front page, listen to the videos, particularly the seminar, and then come to our Monday night meetings. And I think we can grow tremendously and quickly if everyone participates in that. So by next week, I challenge everybody, bring at least one guest. Let's see where we go with that. Okay, with that, Jan, do we have any questions, comments, or shall I say any announcements? Yes.
We have a number of questions tonight, John.
Okay.
First one, do small and solo law firms support the U.S. Constitution more so than the large law firms?
I don't think so. Again, they're all taught from the same poison well, so they all teach the same poison well and believe the same poison well. Every once in a while, maybe one or two here or there get the antidote to that, but generally speaking, they're judicially dead.
Okay. I was excited to see the topic of jury nullification brought into public media by Kash Patel. But can NLA discuss this use by Kash Patel of illegal jury nullification in a New York court at the next meeting?
I don't know what they mean when they say illegal nullification. What's an illegal? Did they make any note of that?
I do not have a copy of whatever Kash Patel said.
Mm-hmm. Well, that'd be interesting. Maybe the person who wrote that, I'll talk a little bit about it now, but maybe the person who wrote that can maybe send in next time some little clip or something that we can look at, or something written down that we can look at. But, you know, as far as the jury nullification is concerned, jury nullification is one part of knowledge necessary for the people in order to be a proper common law grand jury, a free, true, and independent, trial jury or grand jury for that matter. And for that reason, we wrote two books. One of them is the Grand Jury Handbook, which you can find here. Okay, that's found under Start a Committee of Safety, come down to Handbooks and Tools. And that is a really powerful powerful handbook, I believe. It definitely frees the grand jury, and you know, even the grand jury has the power of nullification. We have to realize that, and they need to know that before they hear someone bring a potential case before them, asking for, you know, them to make a decision and get their indictment or whatever it is they're looking for. And now the other thing, of course, is the we've got the Grand Jury Handbook, and we also have the Jury Handbook. It's the Petit Jury Handbook. They're coming from two different perspectives. One is 30 pages, the Grand Jury, and the other one is 41 pages. But it covers a lot of things. And a matter of fact, in our course, we're going to be going through these two handbooks. We're probably going to spend probably one session on each one of these, because it's quite long, but it's an education, and everyone should know this. Children should be taught in school. That's where their true orientation should begin, is in school. And so when they come to sit as a jury, whether it be a petit jury or a grand jury, that they already have this knowledge in them. But it's going to be the job of the jury administrators that will be hired in every county throughout the nation, over 3,000 counties. There are state courts in all those 3,000 counties. And in each one of those state courts, we need four jury administrators and one paralegal, who is also a jury administrator. So there's five of them, really. But one really focuses in a little more deeper on the writing of the papers and focusing in on making sure that the law is being obeyed from the standpoint of the jury itself, or the jury administrators themselves, shall I say. But it's the jury's administrator's job, really, is to liberate the people who are going to become jurists. When they come to become a jurist, and at the end of the day, when they've sat as a jurist and is finally released, they should be new people. In the mind, they should really have come to an epiphany on something, a realization of who they are as a people and what liberty truly is, and the liberties that they have, and the fact that we, the people, are the deciders. We make the law. People don't realize that. And we can nullify any law we don't like. And that includes the grand jury, too. The grand jury can nullify law. As a matter of fact, the paper we just recently wrote kind of builds that position or that point up through nullification. Nullifications of rules and nullifications of laws. Anything that is repugnant to the Constitution is null and void, period. End of subject. And when a grand jury understands that, and again, they come in with these codes and different things and try to apply that upon the people, and the people have the knowledge, then, of course, they have the ability to be able to refuse. So, we have a lot to teach on jury nullification, on the jury itself, from many different perspectives. But I am interested in hearing what Patel said, and then maybe comment on that. I don't know what was said, so...
Okay. I have a simple question. What is a writ of habeas corpus and what does it do?
Well, habeas corpus really means the body, produce the body. That's what it's all about. And so the individual, if an individual is incarcerated, and they have a right to face their accuser. And more often than not, a lot of people are in jail. They didn't have the opportunity to face the accuser. They didn't have the opportunity to really deal with the charges, to be able to know the specifics, even though they may have had a hearing, but they really didn't get anything out of it, and they didn't have any opportunity. Well, when you call forth for a habeas corpus, then they have to bring the prisoner up into the courtroom, and they have to bring the evidence against that individual and make it aware on the record exactly what the charges are. There's a lot of different things, where people are put in jail that would fail, and they'd be forced to release if they just, come forward with a habeas corpus. The federal judiciary, in their great wisdom, has decided not to hear habeas corpuses. And that's one of the things they're working on diligently in the courts to deal with that problem. We wrote a paper here that's going to be filed hopefully tomorrow. I was kind of hoping to do it today, but just never was able to get through all this and put everything together. But we'll file it tomorrow, which is a response to the paperwork that they had sent back. It was a response to them for sending back our paperwork that we sent to the United States Supreme Court. And, we'll be posting that as soon as it goes out, and we're going to take a good look at that. As a matter of fact, probably in our course, we're going to examine that paper from many different perspectives. We're going to examine the paper that we put into the federal court which was a writ mandamus to the United States Supreme Court. And then, of course, then we did another paper to the clerk who blocked it, and they've been put on notice that they're in very serious danger. That they participated in subversion by blocking our message, our information being sent over to the United States Supreme Court. And we did that in a quo wanto, which, of course, demands their oath, their bonds, and their financials. So they have to respond with that, and they have 10 days to do it. We made it clear. And in 10 days, then we're going to file an enforcement upon that individual to remove them from office, and then we'll refile our papers again, going through another clerk, and we'll see what the next one does. We're also going to consider doing an indictment on that individual for being part of the subversion, because they blocked the report of subversion to the United States Supreme Court. But both of those papers, the first paper, again, the original paper we sent into court, for those who don't know, and we do have a copy of that on our front page, pretty sure we do, should be able to be found. But in any event, that particular paper has 18 memorandums attached to it, 18 of them. And each one of those memorandums makes clear the problem with a specific situation within our federal courts. And that goes right down to the state courts also. But there are 18 violations that need to be cleared up in the United States, in the federal district, in the federal courts, and then also in the state courts after that. And in order to bring us back into a common law court, a court of justice. So that paper with those memorandums is extremely powerful and extremely empowering, okay? It brings us to the knowledge of what a common law court is and lays out and shows the problems within our courts that have violated our courts of justice, how they destroyed, you know, our common law. So we'll be going through, there's going to be three cases that we're going to cover inside of our course, our live course on court access and the common law. And probably it's a couple of chapters away before we get into that, maybe. But in any event, those three papers, each one of them will probably take a session on its own. But they're powerful. I think it'll help teach people how to write. It'll enlighten people, and a lot of stuff in there. We've probably heard somewhat, if anybody's been listening for a while, you've heard a lot of that stuff, but not everything. You'll hear some new things in there. And I think it's put together in a very powerful way, and in such a way that cannot be just brushed aside. We don't intend on winning the court case, in other words, having the solution that we desire to have this side of devolution. The possibility is there. But I wouldn't get our hopes up too high. The key thing is that we're setting a record. And ultimately what this paperwork is all about is an indictment on the federal judiciary. That's what it really is about. And what needs to be changed in order to bring us back to where we belong as a republic. It's going to be, a very powerful education. It's going to enlighten us. And reveal a lot of things. These things need to be understood in order to be free and independent people. We need to know the law, and that's exactly what we're talking about. All these memorandums are memorandums of law, and we need to know these laws. If we don't know the law, we can't know whether we're getting justice, we can't know whether they're breaking the law, we can't know whether they're violating their oaths, we can't know anything. We can't even know what liberties we truly do have. Very few people even know what liberties that they have. We have all kinds of rights and abilities, and we're prevented from, and it goes far beyond the First and the Second Amendment. You know, the right to travel, the right to practice law, the right of due process. I mean, all these things are a necessity for an individual who's free and independent. So we need to know these things. And we need to, again, I take the opportunity to make the point, we need to bring our neighbors here, our friends, and our neighbors to learn and participate and get involved in saving America, and by learning how to have government by consent. Because the bottom line, what National Liberty Alliance actually teaches is government by consent. When you put it in a nutshell, that's it. Okay, next question.
Okay, this is a long one. During the pandemic, many of us went into public accommodations without masks on. I did this because in my case, I realized when I wear a mask, I started to get headaches from lack of oxygen to the brain. When I, by myself or with friends, entered these stores where we were immediately harassed by the employees and were told we had to leave because wearing masks is required by law. We stayed calm and explained to them that any law repugnant to the Constitution is null and void. We also cited the Civil Rights Act of 1964, stating that any public accommodation cannot refuse service based on race, religion, color, or creed. The police were eventually called, and they proceeded to attempt to give us citations for trespassing. We later followed up with a notice to stop these policies since they violate rights, and affidavits outlining the events in detail, describing how our rights were violated because we were not allowed to shop as others were freely allowed to. Now, apparently there's an attachment which I don't have. Is there some method of relief you can suggest for these violations of our rights, or how can we take what we have already submitted to these companies and use it as legal documents in a court case that can be used to set precedents and prevent any future attempts to control the population by mandates where local businesses become the enforcers?
All right, well, first of all, again, as I mentioned earlier, our heritage is in the law, and so the first thing people need to do is to know the law to be able to defend whatever it is that they want to defend, and in this case, these masks and being forced to do things that is unhealthy and really, really destructive to our children. I mean, forcing our children to get involved with these things really, really was a great injury to them, And it's going to be a long time before we realize the damages here. You know, for every injury, there must be a remedy. That's a common law maxim. And at the end of the day, people need to be restored. Our liberty needs to be restored. Our courts need to be brought back into where they belong. The injuries that we received medically and our children received, and the pressure and the stress and the years that we went through with that. And for many of us, you know, I know, you know, I've been going through a lot of stress in a sense for over 25 years now. That's about as long as I've known or started to, you know, 25 years ago is about when I started to realize there was something wrong with our government. There was something wrong with what's going on. But if you want to, you know, if you think you have to go into the courts, I don't think you're going to have to go in the courts to get remedy for that, because that's something that's going to happen. You know, remember, they control more than 90% of the economy of the world. I'm sure it's more than 90%. We're talking trillions upon trillions upon trillions of dollars here. Not millions, not billions, but trillions. They own all of the large corporations and the many other small corporations that are formed underneath that. All these shell corporations and everything. They own property, mansions, all kinds of things. They own a lot. Just these couple of hundred families that rule the world alone, and it goes beyond that. But just those alone, it's just you know, you can't even fathom how much is involved here. So all that has to be seized, as Trump said. You know, when you rob the diamond store and you get caught, you got to give the diamonds back. Well, he's telling us something, isn't he? You know, there's trillions and trillions of dollars that's going to be brought into our treasury. And it's not just the treasury of the United States. Remember, we're not the only one. America has built approximately 200 democracies around the world since the 40s. All those democracies were created with a purpose, because they should have been really working to help people to create republics, you would think. I mean, after all, you know, we're supposed to be a republic. But people think we're a democracy. They think we're a democracy back then. They think we're a democracy today. So we created all these democracies, the enemy did. And the purpose of a democracy has only one purpose, and that is to prepare a nation in order to become an oligarchy, because that's the end results. Democracies always end up murdering themselves, as our founding fathers put it. And so that whole purpose was to create the new world order, and to take out all these nations. And then we have all these republics. I mean, there are many, many republics. You know, China's a republic, Russia's a republic, Iran, Iraq, they're republics. I mean, they're republics all over the place. But, of course, their republic, which focuses in on the law, is the law made by them, the law made by the dictator or the groups of dictators, the groups of people that brought it together. The United States is the only natural law republic, where the law was not written by man, but by God himself. And it's a whole different story. But we have to recapture and bring these things back. But nevertheless, getting back to the point of all of this money, what are they going to do with all this? You know, everything's going to be auctioned. It's got to be taken away from them. It was all ill-gotten goods. So it has to be taken away, auctioned off. You know, so everything has to be sold, all the liquidity brought together, gold, silver, whatever the case may be. And then it has to be dispersed among the people, because that's the injured party. It would be an absolute wrongdoing and a signal of the fact that there's something rotten somewhere if they were to seize all this money and governments were to keep it. That would be a major problem, and that would be a tell. As a matter of fact, we have another problem, and it may even be bigger than this problem if that were the case. But I'm confident that's not going to be the case. There's some evidence out there that what I'm saying and thinking is what others are saying and thinking on a higher level. You know, with the fact that people have to be restored. So there's going to be a lot of restoring. But look, no matter what, people need to know the law. And if you have to go fight for injury beyond the injuries that you didn't get, then, of course, you need to know how to get into the courts. You surely don't want a bar attorney doing this for you. And, you know, they say, well, the worst thing an individual can do is to represent themselves. Only a stupid person or a crazy person or whatever phrase they use would represent themselves. Okay. Well, there's nothing further from the truth. Unless you're guilty, there's nothing further from the truth. If you're guilty, you want someone else to represent you, definitely. But But in any event, or unless you're repentive and just tell the facts and throw yourself on the mercy of the court, not necessarily judges, of course, but the people themselves. But anyway, you know your case the best. And if you can't articulate yourself, you still should be able to learn the law and understand the law and then hire someone that can be articulate and knows the law and will represent you. But you have to participate in the court case with them. I was talking to someone recently, this might have been live as a matter of fact, but where the lawyer does not want to share the paper that they're writing to put into the court. You know, and this person I suggested not to fire them, at least not yet, because they got a problem they need to deal with. In my case, I would have fired them on the spot, you know, because no way. I need to know every word that's going to go into every document that's going to go into that court if I were to hire a lawyer or someone else in order to articulate the case for me or you know, run the case for me. Matter of fact, I would be, you know, I guess you'd call it second chair. I'd be the first chair, let them be the second chair. When I need them to talk, I'd let them talk, but I would talk myself. But you can reverse that, doesn't matter. You know, a couple of people working the case, two minds are better than one. But people need to be involved. You know, people go in, I've seen cases where you go into court, okay, and we've watched people representing other people, this is particularly in political cases, the people that whose case it is sitting down, you know, next to their attorney, and the attorney speaking on their behalf, and they seem lost. I mean, they're looking around, turning around, seeing who's here. I mean, they're not even paying attention. I mean, they must have a lot of faith in that attorney to begin with. But they're totally, you know, they have no clue what's going on. They don't understand even what's being discussed. And that's the case of everyone that goes to court that has no knowledge of the law. And the law that you're being that's being applied upon you is the civil law. Same thing as Babylonian law. They're synonymous. Same thing. The purpose of civil law is the law of the city. The law of the city brings us to Babylon. Babylon brings us to slavery, and that's where we're at. And we've been there for quite some time, and people don't even realize it. Got to keep the slaves, you know, ignorant, because if the slaves learn how to run the courts or how to read back in the days, you know, when we had problems, when we had slavery in America, you know, you wouldn't teach the slaves to read because they might start thinking about things and decide, let's get free. But the thing is, and figure out how to do it. But the thing is that in the courts here, people are ignorant to how the court system works. They do not want you to know how it works. They do not want you to get up and talk in the courts, because then you spoil their game. They got a game going on, and they're making a lot of money on this, all of them. The lawyers, the judges, every one of them. And I'm sure there's some honest ones here or there. I haven't met many of them, but I'm sure you meet someone occasionally. But it's a mess. And people need to learn these things. All right, next.
I know that getting a document notarized validates the signer and makes it acceptable as evidence. Is having two witnesses autograph a document as valid and as acceptable in a court of record when being used as an exhibit?
No. You have to have it notarized. A judge can sign it. You know, a magistrate can sign it as a witness, and any notary can sign it as a witness. I guess any judge and any magistrate is also a notary too. So I guess you'd call them notaries. Maybe, I'm not sure. But in any event, being a magistrate, they can sign as a witness and a judge. But notaries are everywhere. I know the bank I go to, every single person in that bank is required to become a notary, so there's always a notary in there all the time. But most banks have at least one notary.
Okay. Next question. During the rape case against President Trump, there are many things that didn't seem to add up. First, I heard that his trial was by jury, only contained 9 jurors instead of 12, that he was acquitted of rape charges but was found guilty of sexual abuse, and that he was ordered to pay the plaintiff $5 million. It is said that he will appeal this decision. I have some questions. First, how can a trial by jury commence with only 9 jurors, and how can a jury verdict be appealed if the jury's decision is final? When has the practice of 9 jurors instead of 12 been instituted, and how can this be addressed in future situations to safeguard true due process of law?
Well, that tells it all, 9 jurists. It's unlawful. It is not a jury. He was never really went in for a real trial. He didn't get his due process because he didn't have a true jury. Also, you know, again, one of the major problems, especially on this side of devolution, is trying to go in before a jury. You have no idea what they've told a jury and why they pick those individuals, unless you're participating in the picking of those individuals, and you know how they were educated in the sense of a handbook, the jurist handbook, and the questionnaires that they filled out. I mean, right there and then, I mean, you can destroy that jury. You know, one of the things we're teaching now, and I'm going to be teaching in this class, is that you want to get a copy of the jurist handbook into the record of the court case. And so it needs to be referred to as the law of the case, and it has to be part of it. And you have to be diligent with this, because they're going to try to throw that out. They try to throw a lot of things out. Anything that is going to help you win the case, they're going to try to throw out if it's a case that's up against the status quo, particularly. Again, we need to get it in there. And then once you get it in there, they're going to try, like I said, they're going to try to have it thrown out, and you're going to have to, win that argument. We'll talk a little bit about that as we get further into our court, into our sessions, our chapters in court access in the common law course. But you have to get it in there. And once you get it in there, now you can bring it up at the trial. Now you can educate the jury, because you have every right to educate the jury. But you need to know what they've been taught so that you know what has to be neutralized. And again, on this side of devolution, it's real tough to get into a court where you're going to get justice. If at all possible, you want to wait until the end of the other side. Or now is a time of education. People who are not educating themselves are only cutting themselves short. Because when the time comes where you'll be able to go in and take care of your own business, you'll be able to get justice. Right now it's difficult to get. But you can go forward with it and fight your case as best you can, and they'll probably throw you out, but at least you made the case and it could be revisited at the other side of devolution. So either way you go. But everyone should know how to protect themselves to take care of their business in court. Every single person. It's your unalienable right to have due process and to be able to go in court and practice law. You have a right. You know, when they say it's illegal, it's unlawful, you can't come in, you don't have a license, well, my response to them is I understand that. I don't have a license, nor do I have an education or concern about civil law. We're not here in civil law. We're in a court of record. That's about common law, where it is a right for me to be able to come in and bring my own position in to argue a case and even represent others, to help others in court. So that's the argument. So they are kind of right. You can't come into their civil court because it's a court of fiction that they created, and you wouldn't want to go into their court anyway, and that's the big argument. We have a case two cases, and trying to be thrown out, one of them, both IRS cases, and one of them is being thrown out, or they're trying to throw it. As a matter of fact, I think today we just heard that they are throwing it out. We haven't got the paper on that yet. So we've got to see the paper. Of course, we'll push it through the appeal process and so on. In that case, they said that it was listed that we did not ask for a jury trial, And the person whose case it is mentioned, hey, we need to let them know. I said, no, don't let them know anything, because we did ask for it. We didn't ask for it. We demanded it. It's called the court of record. And if they're so brain dead that they can't understand that, then so be it. We'll fix it later. First, let's get our foot in the door. Let's see if we can pass the first hurdle that they're going to put up to prevent us from getting in. And then we'll educate them on the meaning of a court of record. But it also shows that they don't read, because right there in the beginning where it refers to a court of record, if they look at the footnote, talks about trial by jury, the tribunal. But they don't read, and they're that brain dead. Every lawyer that I ever asked if they understood what a court of record was, they said, of course, it's a court that keeps a record. Well, that just shows their ignorance. They didn't even find the time to go look it up in Black's Law, Brovier's Law. They'd be educated immediately on what a court of record is, but they don't know. People can pursue their cases now, or they can pursue them later, but at least you're beginning a record. That's what we're doing right now. And again, as far as Trump's nine juries are concerned, as I mentioned, that was not a court of record. That was an unlawful court. That it was not a court of due process. Also, it was a court probably of civil law. I haven't seen the case in any writing or anything, so I don't know. But that right there is a problem. But he will get it appealed. How can you appeal a jury case? Well, if the jury is corrupt or has been corrupted, that's a problem, and it's a just problem that could be justly overturned and have a new case or hearing for that. That can easily be shown. I'm pretty sure that case was a state case. Where was that case held? Does anyone know? Was that in a federal court? I don't think it was. Nobody knows. Okay. Anyway, it would be different if we kind of realized the difference between the two, because we already have the handbook for the juries and we have the questionnaires for the juries. And in both cases, they're repugnant to all things in our Constitution. So, all right, next question.
I don't know how this will play out, but with all this talk about the upcoming change to digital currency in July, will NLA be entertaining this form of currency for donations and course fees?
Well, first of all, I don't know how things are going to play out either. I know how they're going to end up. I don't know how they're going to play out in between now and the time that it ends up and gets back to where it belongs, that being gold and silver, because that's the law. And Trump is bringing back the law, so we need only go to the Constitution. Gold and silver, that's it, period. Forget digital stuff. Now, digital things could still be used. I mean, these cards are kind of convenient, so I don't know that we would get rid of them. I'd vote for keeping them, but you have to have gold or silver in your account. That's where we have to move to. So that really settles the whole problem. Reread that question, because I think it was a second part to that I wanted to respond to.
You want me to reread this?
Well, you knew what I'm looking for, there was another part of the answer I didn't give.
They wanted to know if we would accept digital currency for donations.
Oh, yeah, I have no idea how that's going to work. I don't know. We ask for $5 a month or more in our membership, which is really just a cup of coffee and a bagel once a month, give it up, and there's your donation to NLA. If we had enough people donating, I mean, look, we calculated even with just the membership we have right now, we'd be professional tomorrow. We'd go professional. Everyone would be paid, educated, and we'd be really rocking and rolling through this process. But unfortunately, everybody isn't given $5 a month or more. But on the other side, $5 a month would be a lot of money. So, of course, that would be reduced. And I would think to say just in general, and it may sound crazy, but people who've experienced money back years ago, like I can experience it back into the 50s and the 60s, the late 50s and the 60s, and others can go back even further than that. And in history, we can go back even further than that to see what things cost. Right now, the dollar's worth about 2 cents. So if we're looking at $5, okay, times 2 cents a piece, the donations we'd be looking for would be about 10 cents a person. And now that sounds like it's crazy because we see things through the eyes of inflation. We don't understand the power of money. Money was quite different. I have a bill here. I got to go look for it. I think it was like $7 or $6, and it was a bill from my lawyer, from a lawyer to my mother. For some business that transferred through, and I got that bill. I think I'll take a picture of that. I got to dig it up and post it. And the lawyer only charged $6 or $7. I think it was $6.36, something like that, for the you know, for services from a lawyer. I mean, that sounds insane. So, but we're thinking through the eyes of inflation. We're seeing things through the eyes of inflation, shall they say. So we really don't see it and understand it. But we have to reset everything. So I don't know how things are going to work on the interim, you know, going from one point to the other point. But once we get to the other side, I would imagine that the $5 would automatically be adjusted to about 10 cents. That's my thinking. And we'd move from there. All right, next.
That's the last question, John. You're all done.
All right. Let me see. I may have something. I know I have something here. Let's see if it's on this page where we have the dollar. The dollar is only worth like 2 cents, and probably even less than that now. I heard gold is up over 2,000. Has anybody heard that?
Yes.
It's above 2,000. How much?
2,100, I thought.
2,100. Wow, that's amazing. You know, $2,100 for an ounce of gold. You know, in a proper market without the inflation, an ounce of gold is $20. Actually, it's $19.94 to be exact. I don't know why it's that crazy, but it is exactly $19.94, which means it's we'll just call it $20, which means 20 silver dollars would equal an ounce of gold. And an ounce of gold right now going at $2,100. Let's think about that. And then you look at, I don't know what a silver coin is going for. I know the Morgan silver coins are going for over $26, but let's say it's $25 times 20. So we're looking at $500. My point is if you have 20 silver dollars, okay, and you bought 20 silver dollars, it would cost you $500 right now, okay? That's the investment to get silver. For the same, for 20 times, that 20 silver dollars would equal in reality, in relationship to the silver and gold, being $2,100. So the point is, you're getting four times your money by saving in what they call junk silver, which are the silver dollars, silver dimes, silver quarters, and so on. So, but anyway, that's the ratio. Okay, that's the last question, by the way, that you had given out there, Jan?
Yes, that was the last question.
Do we have any announcements?
No.
Okay. All right. We'll go right into the queue. If anybody has any questions, let me open up the queue. Questions, comments, or corrections, you can get into the queue. If you're on a regular phone, it's a *6 and a 1. And other than that, through the app, you should be button there to get into the queue. Okay, we'll take our first person. Let's see. We've got Mary Ann, and let's see the state. What's that, Indiana? Mary Ann from Indiana. Didn't that open up? Yep, you should have opened up. Let me just go and open her up straight. Okay, Mary Ann, you got the mic.
Hi, yes, this is Mary Ann from Indiana. And I wanted to comment on what you were saying about the law, the court. From what I understood, it was a civil court. It was not criminal court where the case was heard, E. Jean Carroll, whatever.
Yeah, well, they have divided the court. Look, it's very strange because, first of all, they said they've taken law and equity, bringing it together, and they're calling it civil law. And then they break it up into criminal and then civil, okay? In natural law, there is no difference between the two. It's just one court, and it's either, you know, it could be a criminal situation or just a civil situation, but they don't divide it in any way. Everything still falls under the same law, which is the common law, and everything still falls under the same rules of law, which is the rules of common law. But anyway, it was a state court, you said, Marianne?
It was a civil court.
Yeah, but do you know if it was a state or a federal court?
I'm pretty sure it was state.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it would be too, but I just don't know what state. So
I was New York. I'm pretty sure it was New York.
Oh, goodness. Well, anyway, yeah, it's a problem, and I can easily see there's so many ways that he can appeal this and just render it useless. I mean, look at they ultimately they kidnapped him and brought him into jurisdictions unknown is what they did. He has no clue what jurisdiction it is. But that shows us how bad this situation is, that his lawyers didn't even think about this, and he hasn't thought about this.
Yeah.
There's a lack of understanding here. The most important things we need to understand is the law. And to understand the law, we have to start off with the fact that we're a natural law republic. That's where we start off at, right to the Declaration of Independence. And, you know, once you build from there, you know, then you start to see your liberty just grow and grow and grow. So, but anyway, people need to get educated. We need to get the message out. We need to get things going in every county in America. We need the committees of safety going. We need people getting involved to have government by consent and taking their government back at the grassroots level. And through that process, we will be then educating people, and also the committees of safety are responsible for making sure a proper education is in every school, from grammar school through college. Within their counties, they're responsible for that. And you know, I was listening to the Anti-Federalist Papers today, and I think it was Federalist Paper number 21. Let me think about this. Yeah, it was 21. And in that 21, I'm trying to think what it was that they were talking about. Oh goodness, if I think about it, I'll bring it up. But it had something to do with this point. But anyway.
Okay. Well, I did want to ask also, you talk about the list of 18 items that need to be changed in our current court system in order for it to be a common law court or just be fixed within the system itself?
To repair our courts and bring us back to law and equity, period, which is what the Constitution says. You know, the word equity identifies with justice, that which is just and right. Okay, that's what equity really means. And but equity also relates to the idea of man-made law, that it's justice. As a matter of fact, their civil law that they try to put upon us really came to how they did it was from Babylonia. They had a Babylonian law, which then was kind of redressed up into what's called Justinian law, and Justinian law is that which is just, and that's what that was supposed to be all about. Which then again became Roman law, and then just plain civil law. All of it is the law of the city. They're all the same thing, just different names and dressed in a different way, but it's always the same thing. It's controlling the slaves, controlling the people, you know, making permits for everything and being able to take away their rights or their permits that they get and so on and so forth. And so that's the battle that we have in the courts, is fighting that.
Okay. Well, do you have that? Do you have something written along these lines with what you just said, John, and then with the 18 items of what needs to be changed and outlined? Because
right here on our front page, it's a click here to read writ mandamus to the United States Supreme Court. If you click on that, it'll open up and it gives you some information about the case. And then you click on down here, which is the case itself. It's 232 pages when you put together all of the memorandums, and we're going to cover this case in our course of court access and the common law. But we're not going to read everything, I don't think, because it's 232 pages. I'll have to figure out what we'll read through it and take a look at it, because it's very empowering. But people should on their own read this, because this is the law. This is the power and the authority of the people. But anyway, it starts off with file on demand, which is the first page. It's two pages. Then it's a cover sheet to going into the federal court, and it's going to the United States Supreme Court. And then we call it a writ mandamus. It's a prerogative writ of the people's remedy. And this is where the clerk failed to even look at what was going on here and understanding who we by what authority we're coming in at and so on, which we're going to address and talk about. But anyway, this is the paper we wrote. It's 20 pages, okay? Very powerful 20 pages. But for the higher education of this 20 pages, you would read the mandamuses that are attached to this, because the mandamuses expounds on the law in each and every problem. For instance, Memorandum of Law concerning the abrogation of the law of the land, we covered that. That's an important point, which was the Rules Enabling Act of 1934. That passed through the rules in 1938 that the Bar Association put together for the Supreme Court, and they signed it in and brought in rules and throughout the rules of common law. And that's where they combined law and equity together and called it civil law. And people didn't even flinch. They didn't even realize. They didn't understand. The time was ripe for them to do it, because the people were that ignorant that they wouldn't understand and would just go right by them. Another memorandum is the law concerning law and equity, which gets into the more detail of the difference between the two. The next memorandum was a law on the 17th Amendment that destroyed the balance of power in the courts, in our government. The next was a memorandum concerning the abrogation of the United States of America that would bring us back to the Organic Act of 1871. Okay. Then we had a memorandum concerning the original 13th Amendment, which was ratified by our founders in 1819, and that prevented anyone with a position of honor,
title of nobility, I think it was. So
and honor. The key was honor, because it was written in. And I was listening on the Anti-Federalist Papers. They were talking about this. I was listening a couple of days ago, and they were talking about the problem with the in the Constitution, where it refused. Talked about the inability to have titles of honor or nobility in the Constitution, but it didn't say honor, it just nobility. And there was a misunderstanding, I think, because if you look at it in the Federalist Papers, I think it was understood there and the purpose it was put in there for, but they kind of just missed it. See, Congress, they didn't want Congress to be able to give titles of nobility out. That was the main purpose. The argument in the Anti-Federalist Papers wasn't really necessary because they weren't empowered to do that anyway. But it became, really from the other perspective, it became a position from a prohibition, that they're forbidden from doing it, because they love to do things that they haven't been forbidden to do, even though they haven't given the authority to do. I mean, almost everything they're doing, 90% of what they're doing in the legislators, let's say, they don't have the authority, but they're doing it. They have some problems if there's a prohibition on it, like the Bill of Rights, the Bill of Prohibition, where, you can't make law on this and that and the other thing. Okay, and that's been very helpful, and that's what kept our freedom. So it was important to get this into the Constitution. But what they missed was the title of honor. And the fix on the title of honor, whether it came from Congress or whether it came from an outside power source, King of England or whoever, okay? And that's what the 13th Amendment was about, in order to prevent the bar attorneys from continuing to destroy our courts, which they started destroying in 1750. That's when the Bar Association came to being in the colonies, and already, and that was in response to, why can't I think of his name offhand? Anyway, it was in response to one of our founding fathers, Benjamin Franklin. Okay, Benjamin Franklin had the newspaper going up. He was a real pain in the neck to the king. And the king was trying to bring the colonies back under in suppression underneath their authority in a stronger way. Couldn't get his indictments or anything because we were under common law and we saw it differently back then, as they didn't, because they already were losing their common law. And the purpose of the Bar Association was to destroy our common law justice within our courts, to bring us into a civil law procedure back under Babylon. And that's what it's been about all the way since. So when our founding fathers, I think they missed it when they put the Constitution together, and some years later they realized it, and that's why they brought in the 13th Amendment. Right. And the 13th Amendment then made it unlawful for anyone that had a title of honor. Now, all lawyers are esquires. That's their title of honor. See, a title of nobility, that's inherited. A title of honor, that's given individually. Your children don't inherit. There's the difference between the two. But the title of honor, okay, again, brings them to a title, which again is Esquire, and Esquire's their purpose is to destroy the common law in America. And it still remains the same. Bar Association continues to teach it. We wrote a paper on this, laid every single point out, showing how they have destroyed our judicial system in America, and how it, you know, they, you look at this, this is, this was an overthrow of our government, ultimately, through the judiciary.
Okay. Where was that? There are many papers on the website. How would I search, how would I find that paper that into how they destroyed our justice system in America, the synopsis?
Well, you probably would find a lot of this underneath federal court case here. And down in here, you'll find all of that kind of information. Because we've already put this into the courts. We've laid out the courts and put it into the courts. We filed it in the federal northern district here of New York in the federal court. And that, of course, is part of our court case going before the United States Supreme Court in the sense of being the evidence of what they have done. Now, I may have included that in this. Let me see if I did. Where can I find this? Did I lose that page? I guess maybe I did. Grand jury. You know. All right, let me open it up again then. Mandamus to the United States Supreme Court. Okay. It may be in this, right here in this paper. The most important ones are in this paper, so it's probably in here. Memorandum of law concerning the 13th Amendment, memorandum of law concerning the 16th Amendment, memorandum of law support of the rules of common law, which, of course, also talks about their rules in contrast. Memorandum of law concerning the right of free access into our courts. Memorandum of law in support of the county sheriff. And that really gets into the fact that only the sheriff and the coroner can bring a case before the jury. Memorandum of law supportive of common law grand jury authority. Memorandum of law supporting the Pettit jury, their authority. Memorandum of law in support of the people's right to orientate the jury. Memorandum of law in support of the Bible in schools. Memorandum of law concerning non-judicial foreclosures. Memorandum of law concerning Article I courts, no such thing. Memorandum of court concerning the right of habeas corpus. That would answer a lot of that person's question concerning habeas corpus. Memorandum of law concerning the right to practice law. Memorandum of law concerning family courts. Okay, I guess I didn't put it in this one, but it is in a case that we already filed and served in a writ mandamus for, or an information, I think we did it, to the United States Supreme Court. And it has connected to this particular number, case number that we have gotten for this case. We've gotten federal court of record case number, okay? And again, we did this for the sole purpose, ultimately, of having a depository and thereby being acting and being under the auspices of the court. Although we're operating in a tent outside, because they won't let us in. They closed the doors of justice, and they closed the doors to the people. So, but we're operating on the outside, but we're telling them everything we're doing. Nothing is done in secret. And we've been doing so since 2015, 2016.
Okay. I'm trying to read that number, the Federal Court of Record number. My eyes are not good.
That's a semicolon, 16-CV, Jolly Vice, -1490. You'll find that the case is closed, and you'll find you probably won't even be able to get any of the paperwork on it. But all those papers are filed on our website. We haven't filed papers there in a while, but we're going to file some more. But last time we filed papers, even though they've been saying it's closed for years, they've been keeping our papers and haven't been sending them back. They're just hiding it. They're concealing it. And they're not sure what to do, because we did put an ultimatum to the clerk that if they return our papers, we're going to consider an indictment. So that's why they're not sending them back.
Yeah, because there is a website called 45office.com. Have you ever heard of it?
What is it?
It's President Trump's. If you want to communicate directly with President Trump.
What's the name of this website?
45, the number 45, office, OFFIC.com.
Okay, yeah, I've never been to that. That's interesting.
Yes.
Okay, what were you saying about this now?
Well, it's just, you know, contact us. Because from what I understand of this, I have been sending to President Trump whenever I see something that doesn't look right, like that's something that I really can't do anything about really at the local level, like something like Agenda 21.
Yeah. Yep.
Now he's talking a lot about, he's been talking about Agenda 2030. I told him all about that about a year ago, well, a few months ago. I told him about Rosa Corey and Behind the Green Mask and all this, and how this is really infiltrated at the local level, and how we've reached this, you know, we have this economic development that is infiltrated definitely at the county level. They started the county seats and they worked their way in from the main town, main city within the county, and then fan out from there. It's treacherous. It's like a cancer. And now I'm helping to fight it at the local level. Wherever I go, I see it, and I fight it wherever I go, wherever I've lived. I'm very vocal. I don't hang back.
Have you connected with the Committee of Safety yet?
I've been trying to build communities of safety. I tried trying to build one in Cook County, which has been and it's really difficult
in
because Cook County, Illinois.
Illinois, okay.
Yeah, I was
One of the things you have to do if you're finding difficulty, and you probably would without a partner, you got to find one of the person who wants to do the same thing. Maybe get three or four people, just have discussions a little bit about it, look at the handbook, start reading them, and but you got to get a couple of people working with you. Then you can really get some business going.
Yeah, well, I have, and the only thing is, what has really mess things up is I'm pretty sure it's the Anna Von Ritz stuff, and also the GA, what is it, the de jure assembly stuff. We already have GAs. We don't need a de jure, you know, GA stuff.
Yeah, they're not compatible with anything we're doing. And
No, and I totally agree. And it's actually, that's poison the well.
Mm-hmm.
For people, because they hear about committees of safety and they get kind of nervous about that, because they think, oh, is that related to that? Be careful of that stuff. And it's not related to that at all in any way, shape, or form. And I direct them to you, to National Liberty Alliance and so on, so they can find out more.
When I was researching the Jural Assembly recently, and we had a person who gave us some information, which really ended up being no information at all. It's just a lot of blank stuff and mm-hmm. statements that are irrelevant, and there's no real goal or anything. But the thing is what I'm trying to find out, well, where did this come from? How long has it been around? Every single place I found throughout the Internet always led back to Anna Von Ritz, every single time. And I know the people I was speaking to, especially out in Hawaii, they were talking about that they had been separated, you know, that they're not as with or, you know, following Anna Von Ritz. But the nuts and bolts of where they're coming from and what they're trying to do really comes from what she put together. And you'll find a handbook on the Jural Assemblies, and it's written by Anna Von Ritz. And
mm-hmm.
And it's a poorly written paper or book or whatever you want to call it.
But John?
Yeah.
I think the goal of that was just to lead us all to a dead end. I mean, to be quite honest with you, I think the goal of that was just to set up for failure and not for success and mm-hmm. in any way, shape, or form. I mean, especially if you look at her history, and she's somehow related to the Pope that...
it is a connection now.
Like Ratzinger or whatever, the one who was, the whole...
Yeah, it was a while ago, yeah.
It's a nightmare. So, I mean, she's obviously there to poison the well, like you said.
She was unheard of, to the best of my knowledge. She was totally unheard of until we started doing what we were doing. Within a year after we were doing this, all of a sudden she appeared, and they had made contact with us, and we didn't go along with them. We had contact also from Rome, and we didn't go along with that either. And then all of a sudden, she seemed to be everywhere with a lot of money, and just, so you know, there's something going on there. And of course, what she's doing is really subversion.
Yeah.
But we got to move on to our next caller, because we've been a while and a lot of people.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Someone trying to get me?
I was just going to warn you, you got less than 45 minutes, you got 9 people, so.
Oh, okay. All right, well, I'll pass things to you, and I'll kind of stay in the background here. You want to thank the controls?
Say, John, I wanted to ask, I've been meaning to ask, but I kept forgetting, but now that Gerard's here, Gerard, do you remember who the contact was from the Vatican that tried to get with us some years back?
Well, I don't remember the woman's name.
It was an Air Person, the General.
The Vatican General.
Yeah.
And Anna von Ritz claimed to be a secretary to the Pope, bro. Wasn't that her claim to fame?
Somewhere in the Vatican, maybe not necessarily directly to the Pope, but in Vatican.
I don't know. But, you know, the big problem with them is they want to rewrite the Constitution. That's dangerous. They want to throw it out and rewrite their own.
Yes, dangerous indeed.
Yeah. We don't want that, because you'll end up with something, forget about it. We're not going to do... Look, I agree there's a couple places that need to be fixed, but you go rewriting the thing, you're going to end up with not as much freedom as what's there now.
And there's only a few things that really need fixing. I mean, the FBI being one of them, of course, and the CIA and so on, the Justice Department. But other than that, basically, as far as the political part of the government and the judicial part of the government, as far as the structure is concerned and everything that's there, and the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, of course, the Declaration of Independence, and all the laws made underneath it, and all the codes. You got 57 codes. Of course, 26 has got to go. That's too weird. But in any event, generally speaking, there's nothing wrong with our government structure. It's just the people that are in control of it. Get rid of them, we could just pick right up and move right on from where we should be. But there is a, you know, there's GR working with the Republic Review, which is a very vital part of repairing our nation. And we support him. And we've got a page on him on our website for anybody who isn't aware. With the Republic Review, you'll find them. I believe it's under Starter Committee of Safety, and you come down. It's in here somewhere. As Republic Review. Here it is, and you can watch some videos and also some writing here that we've written up. This is all stuff that GR had put together on what he's doing, what the plan is, and the plan is to go really to get the states together to come through and go through all of the legislation and get rid of unlawful legislation and deal with certain problems of certain agencies that were created that we didn't empower them to create. One of them is the FBI, I believe. I don't think that it's bad to have an FBI, but right now, of course, it's part of the New World Order. It's under the control of the New World Order. But we got to figure that out. The people from the state level has to figure that out. So he's calling for what's called a Republic Review, not to add anything to the Constitution, but only or to anything in legislation, but only to remove bad legislation. So it's a vital program. It's a very important one. And all the committees of safety at some point should become educated in what's going on. And when they're strong enough and they're dealing with their own problems and they can put out the effort, they need to get behind GR with this Republic Review.
Well, he's created petitions. I mean, they stopped that central bank currency from going into after the governor vetoed it. And which means they would have had enough votes to override the veto, because it passed when it first went through, right? Mm-hmm. So usually if the governor vetoes it and they got those votes, it would go through. But when he went through his petition process explaining to them that if you do this, you're in treason, that that's not real money and it's against the Constitution, well, guess what? They killed it. They really killed it. They did a good job. you know, of educating these people that if you do this, you're gonna be outside the Constitution, and then we're gonna make that known, and we're gonna come after you. And they got scared, and they didn't vote it in. I think it was Utah, wasn't it?
I don't remember.
Wanted to put their own central bank digital currency in, which is a nightmare. We don't want that.
Yeah, I don't.
South Dakota, I believe.
What's that?
South Dakota,
I believe. Wherever Kristi Noem is governor, I think it's South Dakota.
Okay. Right, because she vetoed it, right?
She vetoed it. However, she wanted it out of the way because she wanted them to do their own currency, their own digital currency. But, of course, that's unconstitutional too. But she had an ulterior motive.
Look at it. This Bitcoin is a problem also. I mean, it's really just...
Amen.
You know, what do they call that? A pyramid. Because all the people that came in early are the ones that are making the big money. But look, it's no different than the Federal Reserve dollar. It's backed by absolutely nothing.
No, isn't Bitcoin supposed to be backed by gold?
Nope, it's not backed by anything. Zero.
Really?
Absolutely. And so I don't understand how people are bought into that. I mean, look at it. If they understand the problem with the Federal Reserve, it's a no-brainer to realize this. So, but again, you know, look at the people who came in early and bought it for dirt cheap, and now it's ridiculous, the amount of money for a Bitcoin. I don't know what it's going for right now, but it's outrageous. But
like $40,000 a coin or something.
Yeah, and what was it in the beginning? Does anybody remember?
I think it was dollars.
Dollars, pennies, right.
Yeah, yeah.
So something is wrong. Something is seriously wrong.
You'll get otherwise right-minded folk who are into it because they just don't understand. They just don't understand the way it's supposed to work. They are of right mind in many ways, but they think because it's decentralized that it's going to lead to freedom, but they simply don't understand the bigger picture. And either way, no matter how you slice it, it's unconstitutional.
Absolutely. Look, we should just listen to God and use God's money, gold and silver. That's what our founding fathers did.
Amen. Gold and silver are cool. I mean, if you ever just held it in your hand, it's cool. It's good.
Oh,
money.
Absolutely, yeah. Silver does feel good. I don't know too much about gold. I mean, silver feels good. Okay, Gerard, you got the controls unless you want me to click the next button. Don't hit the wrong one now. Be careful. I do that too from time to time.
Wait a minute. Let me get back to the screen. I went in looking for Bitcoin. I was checking it out. Well, yeah, I got it. Okay, next question would be Astra from Hawaii. You are
Aloha.
Aloha.
Hey. Hi, guys. I wanted to share something that was news to me, and it's very interesting news. So I was in a court situation where I got unjustly jailed, and I had to have people come and support me on Zoom. And so they basically flooded the courtroom. And what I found out from one of my friends who actually has had a tremendous amount of success getting judges recused on one of the islands in Hawaii, which Hawaii is so corrupt, that's almost impossible. So what he said to me in his communication to me once I got out was he put the court had public commentary on with Zoom, so I left a scathing review. And I didn't even know you could do that. And so I just wanted to share that because I think, first of all, I know that he knows the law. So when he wrote, whatever he wrote, it wasn't just him kind of bitching about injustice. Like, he probably referenced things and it made them realize that he really knew what he was doing and what he was talking about. So I just want to make you guys aware that apparently that's an option. I've never seen that. I don't know if that's a new thing. And I've been,
John had a case that was on Zoom and we were all there, but you could not comment. I don't believe there was a opportunity to make any comments. Right, John?
Yeah.
When they did the Zoom call, I think it was Zoom that we were on. We had a bunch of people there. I mean, you know, just the fact that you got a bunch of people makes them nervous, because they only work in the dark. Well, But I didn't know you can comment.
Yeah, it wasn't Zoom, though, and there were people trying to make some comments, but she shut them down. And I don't know what the name of the program was, but it was
their own system, though, that they used.
Probably the one, yeah. And that was only because of the plague, you know. But I remember, you know, to get in to come in through the phone or something like that, you know, I remember when I was in court for myself and my wife, and they're trying to say that she's defaulting because she wasn't here. And but they had the other side was just let in from another lawyer who came in on the phone, okay? So I said, well, call my wife up. Let's bring her on the phone, you know. He said, no, we don't have to. You know, we just went on anyway, but they didn't default her for that.
Well, technically, if they're going to have somebody come in by phone according to their own rules, they got to let everybody know days ahead of time, and mm-hmm. everybody has to agree to it, because technically that's supposed to be a public hearing in person.
Absolutely. You know, that's something we could do as a normal thing, is make sure the court knows we want people to come in by phone. This way we can bring a lot of people into the hearing, at least to observe and write affidavits, you know.
I can't see them letting you comment, though, because how are they going to control that? Unless they're just going to collect them and read them later, I don't know.
Right. Well, they can't because they're not part of the case, but they're there to observe, that's the thing.
Right. Well, or you could file an affidavit and send it in after the fact, right? Or,
yeah, there's a process. I can't think of the name where you can come in as a friend
of the court. Yeah.
And I forget what it's called, but in any event. Okay, let's go to our next person here.
Okay.
We're talking to Aloha.
Hold on. Hello?
Yep.
Hello? Oh, okay. That was just the first part. Are you guys familiar with what fraud upon the court is?
Fraud upon the court? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so you know that it's officers of the court.
Only officers of the court, yes.
Yeah, it's them actually committing fraud by manipulating the very machinery of the court that would produce impartiality, honor, justice, whatever. Okay.
Correct. So you and I can't commit fraud in the court.
What's that?
You and I cannot commit fraud on the court. Only the, like you said, the officers of a court. But go ahead.
Exactly. And that is, I guess, Bullock versus United States, 10th Circuit, 1985. So this is interesting because what it's basically saying, fraud upon the court makes void any orders and judgments of that court. So earlier someone had mentioned Trump appealing the decision. And I think that he actually knows and is going to use that as an opportunity to expose, because I don't think the general public knows actually about fraud upon the court. And it says here, it is also clear and well-settled Illinois law that any attempt to commit fraud upon the court vitiates the entire proceeding. And that's People of State of Illinois versus Fred E. Sterling, 1934. The maxim that fraud vitiates every transaction into which it enters applies to judgments as well as to contracts and other transactions. So... And then, and what's cool is that it goes on later in this article to basically say, in 1994, the U.S. Supreme Court held that disqualification is required if this is of the judge, is required if an objective observer would entertain reasonable questions about the judge's impartiality. If a judge's attitude or state of mind leads a detached observer to conclude that a fair and impartial hearing is unlikely, the judge must be disqualified. Ligety versus U.S., 1994. So this is just interesting because if the wheels are in motion to start to give us an opportunity in hearings to publicly commentate on what we see happening, and as people are getting educated, there supposedly cannot be even a hint of impropriety. And what these laws and what these judgments are talking about is that basically the appearance even of it nullifies the judge's orders. And it's saying by law that happens, even if there isn't a judgment or even if he hasn't recused himself. So I'm just saying the more that we know and we bring these things up, I think the more inclined they are to kind of go, okay, they're on to us. and I'm trying to find it for my friend where he made that comment and, you know, how exactly that was possible, because I'd never even heard of such a thing. But that obviously is really important, because when I sent to my public defender a recording of my judge giving all these constitutional rights to another defendant and basically saying, this proves that he's partial towards me. I don't get any of those rights, none of them. And he goes, and his reply back to me, this is an email, was, I'm very concerned that you're recording court proceedings. And I said, with everything I just told you, with him discriminating against me and being prejudiced and biased and partial, what you're concerned about is that I recorded for educational purposes.
Well, every hearing is recorded, whether he admits it or not. There's always a recording.
Well, he was saying that he was saying that I was recording it, because he actually sent me the law that says in Hawaii, I don't know if this is every state, but that you are not allowed to record.
How did he know that? Like, well, what makes him think he knew that?
She played her tape.
Oh, yeah.
Well, look at, I record all the time myself, but the thing is yeah. I record for the purpose of being able to write a paper word for word on what's going on. That kind of signals them to one degree or another, but they can't claim or know nothing. But you play it, yeah, that's a problem.
Don't forget, you got the court reporter that's recording by writing down in her shorthand or whatever that language is. But you also have a physical recording, and one of the things you should do is you should get a copy of both of them and make sure they match.
And you should ask for it on and for the record, a copy on the record you're asking for it.
And you want to certify yourself.
And if they want to wait off until, well, we'll get it to you or something, tell them, no, I'll sit and wait. I mean, I've never done that, but that was what was suggested.
Well, see, but what's interesting is what it says in the law is that it doesn't apply to the media and it doesn't apply to the public, because these are public hearings, right? So basically I didn't say to him that I recorded it. You know, I could tell him that I got it from a friend who's been documenting everything that's been going on in my case for education.
Yeah, well, look at that. You're only running into more problems. And
it's not against the law to record, but if you're going to record, you have to let them know ahead of time. We've done this ourselves, remember, John?
Yeah, but that was with video. But look, I would not even tell them I'm recording. They're going to say no. They're going to fight you tooth and nail. They don't want it. But the bottom line is, if you know how to, you could be able to get away with it, record it. Again, you have a perfect record that you can write and respond. And you can even say, hey, according to the record, you know, this was stated and that was stated. You know, just reviewing the record. You can write a paper reviewing the record from the last hearing and come to a conclusion, and you can file that with the court. But going back to fraud on the court, I'll just read it to you in the Bullock case. That's you're correct in that, where the court stated fraud upon the court is fraud which is directed to the judicial machinery itself and is not fraud between the parties or fraudulent documents, false statements, or perjury. It is where the court or a member is corrupted or influenced or attempted. On where the judge has not performed his judicial functions, thus where the impartial functions of the court have been directly corrupted. Now, you know, I'm glad you brought this up, because I'm waiting for a paper to come back from a court for someone I'm doing a case for with Robert Schultz, and this is exactly what took place right here. That's what I got to go after. We're going to appeal to the, you know, they just shut the whole case down. Now, we haven't got the paper on it. You know, we just had a few words that the case is closed. And so we're waiting for the paper to come back. But I'm going to go after these people for fraud on the court. There's a conspiracy there. I already made sent some signals that there was something going on between the U.S. attorney and the judge. And, you know, they didn't respond to that. But not long after that, they closed the case. So, again, I'm waiting for the papers to see what happens, what they actually have to say about it. But go ahead. And the other thing is, and here's the most important thing, as soon as they moved it, you say, we opened this case up in the state court because it's a state issue. Because they no longer, even if these agents were agents of a government agency, even if that was the case, which is not the case because it's not a government agency, they only appear to be a government agency. But in any event, the bottom line, though, was that once they stepped outside of their authority, they lost all protection of the state, all protection, everything. So they shouldn't even be using the U.S. attorney, these people, because they broke the law. And but in any event, when I filed it in New York State Court here, then the U.S. attorney, he moved it over to the federal court and then put a paper in and said that the federal court doesn't have jurisdiction. So that was a game to begin with. But the other thing is immediately upon moving it, we challenged jurisdiction, and they haven't even ruled on that. Once jurisdiction is challenged, it must be decided. There was no decision on that, and they're ruling on other things now, which nothing could be ruled upon until they can prove jurisdiction. The point is they can't prove jurisdiction because they don't have it. But in any event.
Well, exactly. It's just a really important fact, because I think even the other day you had asked me, like, you know, are you within your window to appeal? But I'm not worried about it, because I can, beyond a shadow of a doubt, prove that there was fraud upon the court. And so what it's basically saying is, once there is fraud upon the court, there is no expiration date.
Yeah, but look at. There's something else going on, and there's a game they're playing. It becomes harder to go up the line if you don't move on things quickly. And one of the things we just covered in the course is the fact that when you're going through, if you're going to, ask for instance, for a reconsideration, or you're going to go back into the court to challenge something else, nevertheless, a decision was made, you should automatically file for the appeal, serve notice on the court, because once you pass by a certain number of days, then according to their rules, and again, rules are made to be broken, but nevertheless, it's just another battle to make, then they come and they say, well, okay, your time to appeal has expired. And so you don't wait for one or the other. You do them both at the same time. So you should do both.
Well, here, the one slight problem in my case is that they knew that I knew what I was talking about, and they knew I had them cornered. So what the judge did was he filed a motion against me stating that I was a vexatious litigant. Now, a vexatious litigant by law can only be the plaintiff. I was the defendant.
You mean he filed a decision. You filed a decision, not a motion.
Well, It basically said that if I file any more motions without...
But he filed a decision on your motion.
The judge doesn't make motions anyway. He makes decisions.
Right.
Only the other side can make motions.
It was an order.
Right,
yeah.
Decision and order.
Right. So my point is basically he just cheated. Like, when I look at the law, it only applies to plaintiffs. It doesn't apply to defendants. But the point is he abused his power, stating that if I went against this, he could hold me in contempt of court and throw me in jail. So basically, I'm just saying, at least in this case, I can wait as long as I need to wait. And then it says here, should a judge issue an order after he has been disqualified by law, meaning it's very clear that there's a fraud upon the court, that any unbiased observer would look and go, something's not right here, then he's automatically disqualified. And if the party has been denied any of her property, then the judge may have been engaged in the federal crime of interference with interstate commerce. The judge has acted in the judge's personal capacity and not in the judge's judicial capacity. So I'm just saying there's a lot here in regards to understanding that they do it because they can get away with it because they have all the enforceability. But like you said, sometimes with a situation like this, I just got to put it in my back pocket and keep all my files. And then when I come after him, the damage will be even greater because of the amount of time that it took me because of the threat of just me acting, utilizing my due process rights.
Are you still in jeopardy, though? Are you still in jeopardy?
I'm sorry, still in what?
Are you still in jeopardy in the sense that they have a criminal action still going?
Oh, yeah. So that's the one that's going to be heard.
That's why you got to be careful. You see, another thing that could be done is a quo vanto. If you do all three of them at the same time, that's what I'm thinking I'm going to do, yeah.
Hey, John, didn't we have a case where they told us we couldn't file any papers?
Yeah. I'm trying to remember. Well, I think that happened.
They hold us in contempt.
Huh?
They said they were going to hold us in contempt if we filed any more papers?
Yeah, we filed them anyway.
That's what I thought. Because, I don't know, we either gave him a writ of error or something like that. I don't know. He wasn't
ready. I think that case was under the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury case.
Yes, it was. That's right.
And that's why we figured, hey, we'll file it anyway. Can't tell us what to do.
We got six more in the queue.
Yep.
Yeah, just let me
moving on.
Moving on now.
Yeah, let me see if I can fix this before you go any further, okay? Because I'm going to hit the next question. Marianne should drop out, and Aloha should drop out. Come on, there you go. Marianne did not drop out. Okay, well, we did open up for, what is that, Erica?
Erica, Arizona.
Arizona, yeah.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
So I had quite the experience at court, and I'm kind of just at a loss. So to start with, the courtroom was completely empty except for me and, like, the, you know, judge and, you know, the people that work there. I had a personal recording device, and the sheriff went into my purse and turned it off. And then he went in my purse again, took out my phone, and deleted it, but he didn't delete it off to the deleted file, so I recovered it. Then when I asked if it was a court of record, I was behind the bar, and the commissioner said that she was not going to start recording until I crossed the bar. So also, Ed, who is in the Committee of Safety, who lives in Gila, who drove an hour and a half to come and support me, she told him that he was not able to be in the room at that time.
They can't do that. They can't have secret hearings.
Yeah.
It's open to the public. They committed a crime when they did that.
Yep. They told him
That's a star chamber.
Mm-hmm.
They actually told him he should do an affidavit on that.
Look, at one of the things you signal to them is talking about the bar, crossing the bar. You know, that's a man on the land stuff. And, you know, we'd done that before ourselves, but we'd never do it again. I mean, there was a big mistake, in my opinion. Well, it definitely was a big mistake.
You're giving credibility to their kangaroo court, so you just don't worry about that stuff.
But it also alerts them to what you're going to be talking about too. So I don't know when or what other signals you gave to this judge that they wanted to save you for the end. I mean, we had this with what's his name? Remember that the redheaded guy that you up by
Ryan.
You? Ryan, yeah.
Yeah, they always emptied the room out when we came. He made sure nobody was there. Because when we were in the middle of it, before they knew, there was a back and forth between the judge, and he made a motion or something like that, and then our thing ended, and they made a new date or whatever.
Yeah, the problem back then, though, is we didn't have enough knowledge yet. And, you know, at that point, we should have moved it to federal court for cause. But we're not coming back.
The next defendant stood up and said, I want what he got. So they wouldn't let us in.
They don't like those hearings because they don't have no control over it. They don't know what you're going to say and where it's going to go and how it's going to affect the people listening.
Right. So the other defendant that was coming up after Ryan said, I want to do what he just did.
So, yeah, they didn't know what to do with him.
There was nobody after me. There was nobody in the courtroom. And what she said is, you will come up you will cross the bar and sit in that chair next to Mr. Blackwell, who is the public defender, and be quiet. And if you do not, I will remove you, mark that you didn't show up, and issue a bench warrant and have that officer right there behind you arrest you and take you into custody.
That would never hold up in federal court. That's a whole lot.
But they will do that. You got to be careful because they did do that to a guy down in Florida. Remember, we were giving him advice on what to do, and they kept going the man on the land way. We kept telling them, don't go that way. You're going to go to jail. You're going to have a problem. And what, an instigator down there really took control of the committees of safety that we were trying to build down. Actually, we weren't building committees of safety yet, but we were organizing. And kind of took control of the people. We were trying to educate them and started leading him. He was a CEO of some company, some corporation. So he was a pretty brilliant guy, a bright guy, but he thought he understood all these things, and he was working the man on the land stuff. And he went a different way and wrote papers for this guy. And he convinced this guy he was a foreman. He was actually a foreman on a jury that was active. And he convinced this guy to go forward and start to investigate other cases. And there was something brought against him, and he was in the court. and he was behind the, you know, he was sitting in the seats, but he didn't answer because his name was in block letters, you know, the caps, and he didn't go, he didn't want to pass the bar anyway. So anyway, while he was there, they kept calling his name, and he didn't get up to say anything. So the judge says, well, we're going to sign a warrant for his arrest. Then he got up to start saying, hey, I'm here. They totally ignored him. And then the officer of the court came, arrested him. He went to jail. And that guy died in jail. Because he was an elderly guy. I presume he was on medications, and they don't give him his medications and other things. And, you know, and he was elderly. So, and I guess his health wasn't that great, but he did die in jail, and it was a situation where we told these people not to do this stuff, stop it. You know, these people teaching this stuff on the internet, it's very dangerous, and they're telling people to do all these crazy things, and they're injuring them, because first of all, they don't know how the court system works, they don't know how to really represent themselves, they don't know how due process works, and they think they understand everything because they heard some people talk about doing this or doing that or doing another thing. We got to be real careful. National Liberty Alliance does not teach that. And we do not teach people to form grand juries because that in itself is also dangerous. The only grand jury that we formed was the one that we formed on a high level, the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. And for those who don't know how that was formed, is we visited almost every county in America. I mean, a lot of counties, there's no people in it, so of course we didn't go. And we did quite a few counties at the same time in a central location, and we had quite a few people working throughout the United States going through this process. And eventually what we did is that we then organized the counties within each state, all 50 states, 57 if you're Obama, but all 50 states we organized, and they formed the unified state common law grand jury, or whatever state they were in. So we had all 50 states, and then all 50 states came together and became the unified United States common law grand jury. So the only grand jury that National Liberty Alliance is really pushing forward with is the one that's the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, only to deal with subversion by enemies foreign and domestic within our government. And that's the purpose of why we formed that, and that's what we've been dealing with in the courts, and that's why we've been serving all our papers up in the Northern District. There's no secret about what we're doing, how we did it, who we are, and by what authority. U.S. versus Williams particularly, which leads us to numerous United States court decisions that make it clear that the people have the right to bring together their own grand jury. They don't need permission to do it, and that's what we've done. But we've done it very carefully, but people, you know, we were very careful to tell people not to do this on the state level. We've had a lot of requests for people to want to do it on the state level. You know, we felt that, look, you have to be educated, you have to understand what's going on, and you got to be careful. And you can't get lost in this man on the land stuff because you're going to end up in jail. And we're very concerned about that. So we tell people, don't do that. What we are building is administrators for the grand and petit juries in each county. And that's one of the things we're in the federal courts for, is to bring that power and authority back to the people, for them to be able to step up and take control of the juries through orientating them and dealing with all of those things with the jury needs, where the people themselves do it. Because that's what common law is all about. It's non-participation by government, period. That's what a common law court is all about.
Okay.
Well, I'm, like, right now, I have court again tomorrow. They've been playing hot potato. I am on, like, the sixth judge/commissioner. I filed in GSA bonds, and...
What kind of case is it again?
Criminal.
Okay, what's the crime?
So, it sounds terrible, but I was actually assaulted and reacted, but... assault on police officer, 2 counts, and resisting arrest.
What were they trying to arrest you for?
That's the thing. They both said...
It was a federal court for cause.
It was a hung jury.
Well, the thing is, though, hold it. The thing is we know somebody, we know couple of people, but we know someone very close that was arrested for resisting arrest and was beaten up, and but they couldn't come up with what they arrested him for. You see,
well,
you know.
I never said I was under arrest, and there was.
Yeah, but what did they claim afterward that you were arrested for?
Biting the officer.
Yeah, but what caused that biting?
Trying to pull me out of my car window.
So what were they trying to pull you out of your car window for?
They wanted the VIN number, and I wouldn't get out of the car because they had sandwiched my car between two, and I was like, hell no, I'm not getting out of this car. I didn't say it that way, but that's what I was thinking.
All right, well, two things I'd like to say here. Number one, look, they don't have a case against you. They assaulted you before you assaulted them back. You were just defending yourself. But you never should have done that. And we tell people all the time, look, any cop stops me, it's yes, sir, no, sir. I even thank him for the ticket if I get a ticket. I got to say, more often than not, I don't get a ticket. But when I get a ticket, you know, I then file a paper in the court, and half the time I never hear back from the court. The other half the time I do. And then I just pay the ticket, and that's that. But now I decide I'm going to make some money here because I'm going to go to the court if they pull me in and then move it to federal court for cause if they don't shut down and then get damages. But the thing is this. Do not ever argue with the cops. They have no clue what they're doing. They're doing what they're told. They don't know really what's really going on. You want to make your argument, you make your argument in the court. And so that's what we strongly suggest. But nevertheless, with that said, you still can push a case forward with the fact that you were just defending yourself, trying to pull me out of my car, and the charges are resisting arrest, or resisting arrest for what?
That's exactly it.
That's your case right there.
Both of the police officers, when they were on the stand, the PD said, okay, did you tell her she was under arrest? No, we did not. And, you know, the commissioner at the time during that, she wouldn't drop resisting arrest because she said, I should have known because my car was boxed in.
What court are you in, by the way? State court, county court, village court, huh?
State, Maricopa County State.
Okay, it's a state
court. Superior court.
Yeah, all right. I don't know how the structure is in your state, but okay, it's not a town court, it's not a village court, so okay. All right.
No.
All right, well, anyway, that's my thoughts, is that you can defeat it that way. It sounds like you got a lawyer.
He is a terrible public defender.
They all are.
I've tried to fire him. I've tried to give him a letter rogatory. They're just like, nope, the court hired him and you can't get rid of him.
Well, what he's not telling you is that you can tell the court that you want to fire him, that you don't want him. So you have to serve the paper. Oh, okay. And then they ignored that anyway.
I didn't serve a motion to fire him. I just said in court on the record, I said, I do not want him to represent the defendant. I said, and he's fired. I said, he's fired. And she goes, you can't fire him.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like he might be able to save you in jail time here because of the way the movie made was pretty good, you know. And, you know, the other movie, you look at in a situation like this, and I presume you don't have much knowledge on how things work, and I presume maybe you're even in a course, I don't know, but in any event, you know, you're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place, and so you've got to really, if you got to deal with this guy, you want to try to, you know, keep a good relationship, and one of the things you might want to tell him and sort of suggest, because, I don't know, these guys, they get, you know, upset quickly when you challenge their abilities. But the thing is he did a good job on, you know, asking, did she know you were under arrest? She was under arrest. You tell him. And they said no. Well, that was good. The next question should be, and it should be in the court if they didn't ask it, well, what were you arresting her for? You see, then it's a case game over. If they have nothing, then he should file for a criminal judgment.
It was looking for the VIN number. So what does that mean? You'd had no plate on the car or something like that?
Yeah, but the thing is he doesn't have a charge to arrest her yet. He doesn't. Why were they to yank her out of the car and then she bites him to stop? Okay, then they say resisting arrest. Well, resisting arrest for arrest.
Well, it has to do with identifying yourself, and under the law, they don't recognize that you know, if you're driving without a registration or anything, that gives them jurisdiction.
Well, that thinks they give them jurisdiction, and that's fine. But the bottom line is, the question becomes to the officer, what were you arresting her for? That's the question. Okay, and they probably don't have an answer for that. Go ahead.
Not having my car registered isn't an arrestable offense. It's not a
correct
crime.
That's the point. What are you arresting me for? That's the question. And
well,
I'm surprised the lawyer didn't take it to that next step.
They detained her, and technically if you're detained, you're arrested, from what I hear.
Well,
you know, that. But you're also saying, am I free to go? Am I free to go? You know, because at some point they got to tell you you're arrested and they got to read you your rights.
Well, that's true.
There were no Miranda rights, and he even said he was doing an investigation. But the more I look up, you know, Miranda rights is such a gray area.
You going to court tomorrow?
Yes.
Well, you should get there early enough to ask the lawyer if he would ask the question what you were being arrested for.
This is a statutory conference, and my main thing is that I have never claimed to be the defendant, and I know I have the right to face my accuser, which is the state of Arizona, and I can't put the state of Arizona on the stand. And so I know that this is Admiralty Court that they're working under, because I told the commissioner on Friday, I said, you are the trustee and I am the beneficiary. And she goes, I'm not the trustee.
Well, again, they don't understand any of those things anyway. Let's get back to simplicity. If you want to fight or if you want to win? If you want to win, it's a very simple question. Hopefully your lawyer will ask the question, what were you being arrested for?
Can you ask that at a statutory conference? Because they want...
even know what a statutory conference is, to be honest with you.
If you want to take a plea deal, and I'm not taking a plea deal.
Of course not. Look it. You could do, well, again, your lawyer's not going to do this, but apparently he asked some questions. The cop was asked questions, right? And the question was asked to the cop, did she know that did you know that you were being arrested, right? He asked the cop that, right?
Yes.
Okay. He needs another opportunity to ask the cop another question. If the cop is there, I don't know how the process works with that kind of a thing with the plea deal, but the bottom line is you need to know what you're being arrested for. As a matter of fact, you should ask the court, because the court should have on record, what were you being arrested for? Well, you were being arrested for resisting arrest. Okay, yeah, I understand that, what you're saying that, but what was I being arrested for in that I should resist arrest? That's the question. The court should have that on record already, and if they don't, move for summary judgment.
Did I hear you say that there was a hung jury, Erica?
Yes. Seven said I intentionally bit him to give him AIDS, which, no, I don't have AIDS. And one said, that's ridiculous. That's not even, how are you even thinking that?
So the jury already ruled on it?
Yes.
So the case is over.
They're not looking at this as common law.
What did the jury decide?
That's jury law too. If you got a jury and they were hung or whatever it was, that's a decision. That's a petty jury. Even under statutory law, it is what it is. Once you have a jury trial, and they come up with the judge is bound to go by that.
Yeah, it was a hung jury, and she asked the prosecutor if she wanted to retry it, and the prosecutor said yes.
And how many people were on the jury, by the way? I didn't even know there was a jury involved.
There were 10 in the jury, and then they took 2 out as substitutes, and so there were 8 that made the decision.
Okay, well, there's supposed to be 12. And look, you didn't get due process. They were acting. You have no idea what jurisdiction this was. You're in jurisdiction.
No.
unknown. That's where you're at, and your due process was violated. And they claim a jury made a decision, and the judge overturned that decision for a retrial. That's double jeopardy. There are so many things here, and your lawyer's not talking about them because he's trained not to. Either that, or he's a moron.
Well, no, she's got to bring that all up in federal court.
Now she's got to know how to do that. Do you know how to do that?
I mean, I've started taking the common law. I've started taking the course. And so this ruffled her feathers. I said, I move to take this, I forget how I word it, to federal court for cause. And she just, I ruffled her feathers.
Okay, well, you got to do this in writing now. You got to make this official. Did you do it on and for the record? On and for the record, I moved this case to the federal court for cause. Did you do that? And what causes the denial of due process?
She kept turning the record on and off.
Yeah, that's another game they play. Well, you're going to court tomorrow. What for? To make a plea. You're not going to plea or what?
No. Then they want to schedule a court date.
Okay. And what's your lawyer doing about all this or saying?
He's just going to go along with it.
Okay. This is what I suggest for you to do. Here's a suggestion, okay? You want to get in there and say, look, you feel that, well, you don't want to give them too much of what you're thinking, okay? So you're going to say, look, I need another lawyer. I don't want this guy. I need another lawyer. I need some time to do that. So I'd like to get as much time as I can in order to hire a lawyer, go through the case, and do what I got to do. He may say to you, well, how much time would you like? I'd ask for 90 days. He may give it to you. He may only give you 60. But I don't think they'll have a problem with 90 because they probably have a full a full schedule anyway. So it'll probably give you the 90 days. And the other thing is now that you don't have a lawyer and you're looking for another lawyer, let them think that. You don't have to tell them that. Just say, I'm looking for other counsel. I don't want this guy. And I need time to get money up because I'm going to have to pay. Was this guy was a public defender, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so I need time to get some money up to deal with my problem here. I'm not a rich person, and I need to find someone who will represent me counsel. I want to get counsel, and that's it. Now, you get your 90 days, you have time, you're going through the course, you're going to learn a lot more between now and then, and then if you bring it up on the Q&A on our next course, I'll direct you to the paperwork where you can start reviewing ahead of time on how to move your case to federal court for cause. And then as soon as you feel comfortable, which you should be able to do within the next 30 days, you file the paper moving it to federal court for cause. Okay? If you have 90 days, you might wait the whole 90 days just to get more knowledge and everything, but you get your paperwork done and ready to go, and you file it early enough. Once you move it to federal court for cause, then it's going to be some more time before anything happens, another 30 or 60 days. So you're going to have plenty of time to deal with this. There's so many things you can go in for. Double jeopardy is one of them. Not a proper jury. A jury is a jury of 12, okay? The court process was not according to the common law, which is what a court of record is all about, and which is when a jury is involved, is all about. There is nothing on the record of what you were being arrested for. Do you know if that's true or not? What do they say you were being arrested for other than resisting arrest?
Well, they said I was arrested for felony assault on an officer, 2 counts.
Because that's the resisting arrest. But the thing is what they were arresting you for.
Originally, there was nothing.
Okay, it's nothing on the record. That is another point. And you're not getting due process. You're in jurisdictions unknown. Matter of fact, there's fraud on the court here.
What?
You got fraud on the court. You really got to focus in on this, and that's the only way you're going to win. And worst case, if they reset another trial, that might give you 30, 60, 90 days anyway if you can't get a full 90 on your own. But even with or without that lawyer, you could move to federal court for cause on your own. You don't have to talk to your lawyer about that. Just file the papers and make the move.
Now, how do I file the papers?
Again, in the class, you can ask me in Q&A, and I'll point you to some stuff with all the instructions and information. You can go through that. You can start to write your paper. And then when the next course comes up next Saturday, you can ask some questions about what you don't understand about this or that, you know. And eventually we'll catch up with you on that part in the course. Okay? So you will teach you that. I'm not going to be able to go through it right now, and you can't get it all in one sitting.
Okay, because I just want to make sure that I can get that out, because last time when I said I don't want him, he's fired, she said I could not fire him.
Yeah, well, so, that's a lie too. But in any event, again, more fraud on the court. You got to make I hope you're keeping good notes. I think you said you were recording too, right? And you got the recordings?
I did get some recording, yeah. Okay, and then in the Committee of Safety, he got some when they allowed him to come back in.
Okay, look, you need to get those recordings, play them, and make some notes, some bullet points. You need to make bullet points off of memory. You need to pull all your stuff together, and you need to go get a copy of the record of the court case, because that's all the stenographer had done it. And, you know, so you got to pull all that stuff together and start planning and preparing for your federal court case. And in that court case, you're going to have on your wherefore clause the cease and desist to the court order to the court from the federal court. That's number one. The other thing is you want to go after injuries for denying your right of due process. Also, you're going to want to sue your lawyer at the same time. And once you start suing the lawyer also, that cans them anyway. But anyway, you're in the federal court at this point. But you see, you also want to go after, there's so many things you can go after him for. Double jeopardy, as I mentioned. Hijacking you to jurisdictions unknown. Operating a civil law court in as if it's a common law court with 10 jurors when it should be 12. I mean, there's just so many things here. So you need to start working on that. But with that, we've got to move to the next person because we're way over time.
That's good. That's good. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
All right, Josh.
I want to get involved.
All right.
Thank you.
Just connect with Jan, let them know, and again, there's a lot of people kind of we connected with, and we haven't pulled it together yet. Give me some time. I'm trying to bring things to a better organization in order to start getting things busy. Gerard, you want to hang out a while and take a few more with us, or what?
John, this is Ed. I want to thank you for helping this gal out.
Okay. You're welcome, Ed. Okay, let's take our next caller. Let's see. It is
Dwayne.
Dwayne, yeah, Dwayne.
Yeah, hello.
Yeah, go ahead. Dwayne from Illinois, it looks like, right?
Right.
Right.
All right, so I have a probate case with my son. I was wondering about the bond going after the bond for wrongdoing of the administrator of the estate, because it's her aunt, it's his aunt that's causing all his problems. The last move was we had an interrogatory, which our lawyer, you know, caught her basically. Prove that she doesn't even know what she's doing.
Let me ask you a question. You say it's a probate case, right?
Right.
And your son, what's the deal here? Your son has, what's up with that? How is he in probate court?
Well, his grandmother died without a will, and they had a motorcycle repair shop and sales business.
Hold on. Okay, so you're going to probate court. This is the grandson that is making the argument. The court has brought this in. Is the daughter or son alive to the grandma? To the grandma? Does grandma's children alive?
Right.
Who?
My son's mother. She's alive. She was the firstborn, and then the aunt.
Okay.
So and then there's another group that was surviving siblings.
Okay, I got it. Listen, there's a process here, okay? If my wife was to die, I get everything, and I'd probate court go away. I'm next of kin. That's it. If I were to die, and my wife were to die, and my children, then they go next. And here's the thing. This is where these kids make the big mistake. I don't know what's causing it. It could be numerous things. It could be greed. It could be, it could be they think justice is not being played or whatever. But what has to happen really is there's two daughters here now. There's no other children, just the two daughters to the grandma?
Well, there was a son who, besides the two daughters, there was a son who died. But he has three children, so they're part of it.
Forget that. We're talking children. So there's two daughters left, period.
Two daughters left, right.
Okay, and the two daughters are in a battle.
Right.
And how are you related?
There's my ex-wife.
Okay, all right. Do you have any influence over them to have a conversation that you might be able to influence them?
Yes, I was writing. I was
okay. So what you need? I'm going to tell you.
I'm going to tell you
what you need to do. Okay, you need to take two daughters, get them together, and make them to understand that there's going to be absolutely nothing left by the time the court finishes here. So you two women need to figure this out and figure out what needs to be done because you are the inheritors. You're the ones that's going to inherit this thing, and the probate court needs to go away. Okay, you need to get rid of them. Now, as long as there's a conflict, you're not going to be able to get rid of them because they're there to deal with that conflict. But they're not interested in solving that problem. They're interested in milking it. And they will milk it and milk it and milk it until there's nothing left. If there's $1 million there, you're going to be left with a dollar or you're going to be left owing bills because there's going to be nothing left. And
right.
They need to understand that. They need to get out of that court. They need to come together and go to someone that go to a preacher, go to a church, go somewhere and get some arbitration, or figure it out in yourself. Look, I used to do a lot of arbitration in construction, okay, and I was involved in a lot of arbitration. And you always get a good settlement when you come and you admit to certain things. Look, you got it here. I'm wrong here, and we did this or we did that. But you're wrong here and you're wrong there. Let's work something out here, because if we go to court or we deal with even a regular arbitrator, which is usually the engineer or the architect. Okay, who knows where things are going to go? Let's see if we can both win on this. Let's admit to our wrongs. Let's figure out what has to happen, and let's split the deal, and that's that. You need to work out some kind of relationship like that with them and get out of that court. And if they don't, then they're going to get what they deserve. If they refuse to do it, then they're going to get what they deserve, which is nothing.
Right.
So that's
well,
all I
have. My son is the third part in it because he was basically in partnership with his grandmother in the business.
And that's on paper? Does he have stock? Does he have, what does he have in this?
Well, he's put his own money in.
Does he have a contract? Does he have stock?
No.
And he's not going to get nowhere with it. So it's just hearsay.
Well,
is it a registered repair shop?
Yes.
Well, there's paperwork right there, John.
But if both names
our lawyer.
Hold it. Listen, it may be that the grandmother's name was the only thing on there. I don't know. Even though there's a relationship underneath that. Was both names on that repair shop?
Well, our lawyer thinks that we have a case for that because
lawyers always think you have a case. Trust me. They want your money. They want the case. They want it active. What's that joke? How can you tell when a lawyer's lying?
He's talking.
His lips are moving, right. Look, there's a big meaning to that. It's very hard to find an honest, just lawyer. Extremely hard. They are trained by evil to do evil. And it's all about money. Money, money, money. So, no, if your lawyer thinks he has a case, I'll tell you why. Why don't you ask that lawyer, what is the essence of the case? How do you think we can win this? And then you come back and tell me, because I'd like to hear it.
Well, as far as it goes, it looks like he's doing a pretty good job.
Looks deceiving.
Right. I understand that.
You're in probate court. You shouldn't even be in probate court. You see, the lawyers don't even want the two parties to discuss things because they may work it out. And what should the two parties do before they do anything? They should discuss things. And they're not.
Right.
The lawyer's never going to tell you to do that because he's out of the picture now and you're not putting nothing into his pocket now. Look, this is all about money. And like I said, there are very few lawyers that are not driven by money. Unfortunately, there are very few people that aren't driven by money. You know, so everybody has a price, so they say, but there's some people have no price at all. I should hope that I'm one. But in any event, you got to get together and get out of there. Okay, so you need to find out more information of what's going on. Don't get lost in the illusion. Get to the facts. Say, Mr. Lawyer, you say we have a good deal, or a good potential. What's your strategy? How is it that you think we have a good deal, good potential of winning? How long is this going to take, and what's your position, and how can we prove it, and how long is it going to take? He's not going to have, maybe he does have answers. Let's hear him. But I'll tell you what, two people that have the problem that created this problem, and that's the two daughters, because they're not coming together to an agreement. You know?
Right. Well, the one daughter, she has a mental illness, so, it's hard. They're just not going to get along.
Well, again, what kind of a mental illness? How bad? Schizophrenia? What?
Her dad, who actually started the business, I mean, they hated one another, so... and it was basically it's called a post traumatic embitterment syndrome. I actually looked it up. It's basically unforgiveness.
Once that comes up, now you're back in probate court. You'll never get out of there. Look at you. You got a nightmare ahead of you if you're involved personally.
Right.
Me, I wouldn't care about the money and I just walk. I mean, I know that could be hard, but that's how I would do it. The bottom line is, if there's a piece of the business that you can prove is owned by the son, which would be the grandson, then that's a slam dunk. Take you apart and move on,
Right. Well, we're moving towards that.
But that becomes another problem, because how do you get rid of the other 50% that's holding on? What's up with that?
We're going for 50% of the business, and then the other 50% would be divided between the three children, remaining heirs.
Well, you need to find a way to work this out, because probate court is just, you're never going to get loose from there. They're never going to let you go. Not until every dollar is spent.
My question was about, filing against the public, the bond against the aunt for wrongdoing.
Yeah, I don't know how that would go.
She's the administrator of the estate, and so she put up a bond to be the administrator. But the thing is, she's an administrator under court supervision.
Why is she under court supervision?
I'm not sure exactly what the reasoning was for that. That was just
the way
it was set up.
She's the one with the mental illness?
What?
She's not the one with the mental illness, is she?
Yes.
Oh, she is the one with the mental illness.
Yes, she's the administrator of the state. Well, they won't recognize the mental illness.
There are some people you just can't talk to, but, even...
Right, this was one of those cases,
well,
yeah.
Well, you never know if you can get someone... Is she a Christian? Does she go to church?
No.
Okay, because if that was the case, I would suggest to talk with... Have her talk with the pastor and ask the pastor to help work this problem out. That can't happen. Is there anybody that they both trust and have respect for?
Well, my ex-wife and he has been talking to her sister, and this has been an ongoing battle for the last 2 years.
There's nothing more I can say about the case other than they need to find a way to get out, and the only way they're going to get out is to come together. And if there's bitterness and there's anger and there's starvation for the money and all that stuff, to be honest, me, I just walk away because I wouldn't even be bothered dealing with it. If there's no way to go, just go. That's my own personal thing. I mean, I'm not telling your son that he should do this, whatever.
Right.
But the thing is that you know, I gave you all that I can give you on that. So I have nothing else.
My question was about the bond, filing for the bond.
Who's got a bond? Why does she have a bond? Because she's the administrator?
Because she's the administrator of the administrator of the state, so she has
a bond. She has a bond. But you have to prove that there's something going on, that you have the right to have a hearing of concerning the bond. So if you think you could beat it on that end, you can go on that end. I don't know. But anyway, we got to move on because it's super late, and we do have a couple other people we'd like to get in.
Okay.
So,
thank you.
But anyway, you need to try to get out of the court. Your son needs to try to get out of that thing, get out of that courtroom. And the only way it's going to happen is two people come together. And it's difficult sometimes, unfortunately. All right. Gerard, next question.
Brent?
Brent.
Hang on, there's no name on it.
There is. This Brett is next. There you go.
Oh, okay.
What state?
Brett.
Hello?
Yeah.
Hi, Wisconsin.
Wisconsin, okay.
Yes, I a few questions here. Now, making a seal, does the word seal supposed to be in on that seal?
It doesn't have to be, but I always put it there.
Okay.
Wait, on the seal itself, no. No, on the seal itself, for instance, that's one thing. You know, where the seal goes, you should put the word seal. And if you don't have a seal to put there, the word seal should suffice anyway for what purposes it's being used. But no, for instance, on the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury Seal, we have the Unified United States Grand Jury Seal on the outer ring. And on the inner ring, we have Lex Naturalis De Gratia, which is common law by the grace of God, on the second, the inner ring. And then on the very center, we have 1215 AD. Now, on my personal seal, I have Court of Record, Natural Law by the Grace of God on the inner circle, and Court of Record on the outer seal, New York Court of Record on the outer seal. And then in the center, I have the year I was born.
Okay, so the word seal...
does not have to be on the word seal.
Okay, and if so when signing a paper, when it says... pro per, what about sui juris? Is that...
Yeah, well, I like to use improper in my own person. Sui juris, I should get the definition. Gerard, do you remember the definition? I think it has something to do with representing yourself or something.
Yeah, as yourself or something, I'm not sure.
I try to be careful. I usually put in personam in my own person. That's the best way to go, in my opinion, but it doesn't really matter too much, I don't think. It's a word game. It's just word games that they play.
Okay. If an agency doesn't respond to you, or if they choose not to pursue it, will they have to let you know, or is it just assumed that it's over with, the case is over with?
I don't understand. I don't understand the question.
Well, if they don't respond to your paper, then they defaulted.
So does that mean it's the case is over with, or?
No, you have to file the default.
Well, first of all, who's taking who to court?
He said if the agency doesn't respond.
Yeah, but are you in court?
No, I'm not in court. I challenged jurisdiction, and then they tried to move past it, and because
you
they didn't.
Challenged jurisdiction of what? The court?
Yeah, to the
administrative court?
Yeah, it was municipal or village court.
Oh, well, they don't have jurisdiction over persona. You challenge jurisdiction in the court, period. And once jurisdiction is challenged, it must be decided. And just by deciding it is not the case. It's got to be heard. Okay, and so in order to decide, it has to be heard. So that means you write a paper, the other side's got to write a paper, then the judge can make the decision, only what's before him or her in the paper, period. And if the other side doesn't write a paper and you write an affidavit, your paper, which will be an affidavit form, both cases, then you'd inform the judge when he makes the decision, well, I got jurisdiction. Well, how did you come to decide that? I'm the only one here with an affidavit unrebutted rules the court. Case is over. I win. That's the way you got to judge it. Now, he's going to argue with you. Then at that point, you say, well, I'm going to move this case to federal court for cause. Then you sue the judge in the federal court for denying you due process and anybody else that's involved, the officers of the court, not necessarily the bailiffs or anything. We're talking about the prosecutor or whatever attorney is there. And hijacking you into jurisdictions unknown, denying you your due process, and whatever other violation of a right you can find in there.
Yeah, it seems like everything just fell off or stopped. There's no response. So.
But we have that. We're going to be going through that in our course. Are you in the course?
Okay. Yeah, I'm in the course. Is that going to be next week or this
coming?
Well,
no. I'm not sure when. Next week we still have to finish up. We're in Chapter 5, and then Chapter 6 is going to be memorandums. And I'm not sure after that, maybe 7. I'd have to look in to see. Let me take Let's see. Pleadings, we did cause of action, defenses. We just did motions. We got to finish up on motions. Memorandums of law, we're going to go into that next. And then the rules of the court, getting ready for trial. So somewhere in here, we're going to have cases. So it's a little bit down the line before we go through some cases. We have extraordinary writs we're going to be going through. Moving for cause, that's in Chapter 10. It's way down. But you can jump ahead and start working through this stuff without me. Meanwhile, you're building up your knowledge of due process in courts, and you're building up your knowledge of common law, and you can get your information here.
Okay.
So here's a jurisdictional challenge, instructions for challenging it, notice of motion, all the information, the paperwork you need to file, and then move for cause into federal court. So you challenge it first, jurisdiction, and then move to federal court for cause. So it's two processes.
Okay, because I didn't hear nothing from the jurisdictional challenge, so I sent out a default, affidavit of default, and still haven't heard anything. So I was just wondering if that means they're just stalling or...
You filed for a... You made a jurisdictional challenge and nobody responded. Is that what you said?
Yeah, they didn't respond. They tried to move further.
Did you do a notice of motion on top of that?
Yeah, the very first time.
Okay, so you did notice of motion is a piece of paper, and then underneath that paper, which is the motion, you're challenging jurisdiction.
Yeah, verify show cause.
So you have those two, okay, and then how many days has it been? 30 days?
Well, that was back in January.
Oh, file a default.
And I did that.
Where they go from there. They're brain dead in those courts. So they don't even understand this. It's just steps you're going to go through. But we'll see. Maybe you'll be surprised.
Okay. What is the difference between an autograph and a signature?
An autograph, I have no idea. Gerard, what would you think that? I never even thought about anything like that. Autograph, how would you define an autograph?
I thought they were one and the same.
Okay.
Unless one's in strip and one's print, I have no idea.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I was trying to figure out. We're supposed to be printing our name, or are we supposed to be...
Look, you can sign it. You can autograph it with an X, or sign it with an X.
Okay. Autograph is a person's own signature or handwriting. Manuscript in the author's handwriting, a person's own handwriting. So I guess there's no difference. Person's signature.
So. That clears that up. And is there a difference between a notary public and a public notary, or are they the same?
Never heard it reversed. Have you, Gerard?
No.
Ask them if that's what they're calling themselves. Ask them if there's a difference between the two.
Maybe they're dyslexic.
I'm aware of word games, wordplay, but do we come up with our own case numbers, or do the clerk...
No, the clerk gives you the number.
Clerk comes up with that.
What kind of case is this? Is this a...
That was just a general question, if we were going to file a case, because some of the papers, it would say case number, and so...
Well, this is a code violation of some kind that they're coming out, right?
Yeah.
What is a commercial code? Is it to do with traffic code or what?
It's non-traffic, but it's property damage, or damage to property, however they want to put it.
Damage to someone else's property?
Phone case. Or not phone case, phone screen.
phone screen. Oh, I think we spoke about this a while back.
Yeah,
I remember that. They wanted you to bring her in. I told you don't take her in.
Right. Real goofy. So it's almost like they're backing off, but I don't want to get...
If you start doing some good paperwork and putting it in, you can learn it right there. You can almost do word for word what I put together and just make it your own. You might jug it around a little bit however you want. But the thing is when they start to see some serious paper running through, it might make them nervous. And so you've already done everything. So now what you need to do is you said you filed a default already, or are you looking to do that next?
Yeah, well I sent it to them and the prosecuting attorney, because I was supposed to call, and I called and they didn't pick up. So it kind of seemed like...
Well, now next step, if it's been that, how long has it been since you filed the default?
That would have been April 21st.
Okay, so May 21st, which is not far away, another, 6 days or so, maybe make an extra day, 7 or 8, and then go down to the clerk and do an affidavit of default and file it with the court.
Affidavit, okay.
Case is over.
Got it. Now, when does incorporating our name or children's name or filing as a DBA, does that benefit? Is there a benefit to that?
Why would you want to file anything as a DBA?
Or incorporating it? Well, kind of.
Corporation makes you a fiction, and in their game plan, they're going to want a lawyer to come in and do all the business.
Got it. Okay. I thought it kind of you kind of own it more so.
Nope, where they, at all. If you're a business and you're being sued, or you're suing someone as a business and you're a DBA, you don't need a lawyer. If you're Inc., they're going to tell you to go get a lawyer. You can't represent an Inc.,
okay,
according to them.
Does all cap letters name mean anything, because it's on personal checks and personal check?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It means that they're full of fraud. That's what it means. But getting it anywhere is another story.
Okay. All right, and last question. In a proceeding, if a judge rules but there is no jury, there's something wrong with that, right?
Yeah, that's called a summary judgment, and that's unlawful in a court of law.
Summary judgment?
You know, you can agree to a judge hearing your case. Let's say you have a contract dispute, and you go in, you have two options. You can use the contract and have a judge to make the decision. That could go a lot quicker. It could be done in a day. Or you can go for a jury, and it could take months before you get through things. So, but we don't have judges that we can trust, so I wouldn't go that route.
Could judges still sentence one to prison?
They do, but it's unlawful. It's unlawful, but they do it anyway, and prisons accept them, and people go to jail willingly, and they serve their time, and they come out, and of course there's an injury for that, and they still don't do nothing because they don't know any better. No judge, no man can sentence another man to prison. Zero. End of subject. Nothing to talk about. Now, of course, they do it because
right.
They're lawless.
So...
only the people can make that judgment.
So challenging jurisdiction would assist in something like that?
Well, yeah, but you have to know how, and you have to find the, you know, the points that make your point, that builds your case. So it depends on the case and the court, and depends on a lot of things. You can go for they don't have the proper venue. It could be for non-jurisdiction. It could be for no personam jurisdiction.
Okay. So. All right. Well, that concludes my question.
We're going to try to get two more people in. So, okay, Brett.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you. Let's see if we get the other two people in. It's late, but people staying here, so we'll continue talking for a little while longer.
This is Dan Stanlin. Finally, I can't believe I am finally got on here after 3 weeks, and I'd be in the queue, but It didn't. Y'all wouldn't. Somehow or another wouldn't recognize that I was in the queue. But you hear me okay?
Yep, we hear you. We
okay,
see. Okay.
Well, I'm okay. Beg your pardon?
We see your phone number, but we don't see your name next to it.
Okay, maybe it's Dan Sandlin. Okay.
Yeah, we know you, Dan.
Out of North Carolina.
Can you put his name on that? It should stick on his phone number if you can. But go ahead, Dan. What's your question?
All right. The lady that was on there tonight about last week, we went about 45 minutes to an hour over that same situation. That lady made a decision, and it was right in her decision to not put a tag, an Arizona tag, on her vehicle. And she had already denied the car dealer or whoever she bought from, said, look here, I'm buying this car from you. I do not want to be any adhesion contract, is what she was telling him, by him filling out papers for certificate of service. Millions and millions of people. Pardon?
You mean certificate of ownership, right?
Yeah, certificate of certificate of manufacturer's of origin.
Right.
And that's the name that she owned. Pardon?
Yeah, you're right. Certificate of origin. It's been a long time.
Right, right. I made a mistake there, but anyway, I appreciate you correcting that. And literally, millions and millions of people are caught up exactly with an adhesion contract with the state. And as long as she is not in a commercial, as you pointed out, a setting, she has right of travel. And as long as she pays taxes, that's gas tax, on a gallon of gasoline, and any state's got it, unbelievably. She supports and is not doing anything unrighteous, or she is very just. And paying back to, you know, where the roads are constructed for us to ride on. Well, the other thing that I saw
one other thing she should make sure that she has, and that's insurance. And if you don't,
no question about it.
Unless, of course, you have your own money to back yourself up, and
absolutely. We had a man down here by the name of Mr. Odell Williamson. He's late now, Mr. Odell Williamson, and he didn't believe in insurance, but he had enough funds to be able to prove to the state that he could take care of people was in error. The next thing, let's move on. About that lady, when they reached into her car and drug her out of there, you guys didn't seem to find out what kind of officer it was. And I want to inform that lady, the only officer on the roads that have the right to write a traffic citation or any kind of citation is the sheriff's. And any highway patrol.
That. No, that's not true.
Sir?
I disagree.
Yes, it
with
is.
Sheriff's
yes,
are
it
not,
is. I'm telling you that.
Sheriffs
Pardon?
Are not code enforcement officers. They are law enforcement officers, period. They do not give tickets, or they should not be given tickets.
Oh.
Now, they can give a
well,
ticket.
Well, you
they
and
can.
I differ about that, but anyway, regardless, let's move
okay.
on.
Well, let me make this point, though. The sheriff can give a ticket in commercial. In other words, a vehicle that is commercial plates operating
yep.
commercially, he can do that, but it's basically not his job. Pretty much all of these code enforcement officers that are riding around, that's the only ones they're supposed to be giving tickets to. And they do have the authority to do that. So a town cop does have the authority within that town to give a violation, a ticket to someone who's operating commercially and is violating the traffic violation, whatever that law is. They have that ability, and the courts do have, they do have the subject matter jurisdiction to hear it, and they do have the ability to, for the person, individual involved, and the only thing they cannot do, okay, is they can't incarcerate.
Well, I will tell you the catch 52 is when they drug that lady through there and they didn't say you're under arrest, I don't care whether it was a highway patrol or a sheriff or deputy or whoever or a policeman, it doesn't matter. They by putting their hands on that lady inside of her own car, they absolutely assault, that's assault and battery, and she had right of defense. Accidentally, it's bad that she bit the man, but she had right of defense right there, and
She did the only thing she could think of to defend herself. I agree with you.
I understand.
Well, I agree with your thinking.
So one a few other things that wasn't covered, because this is two weeks now that this lady's come on here about this case. And I will tell you another thing is this. When she got into the courtroom being arrested, apparently, she has the right to question the judge as to what kind of court this is, and she can tell the judge that she will remain outside. She wants to know where the bar is, that she doesn't want to get into it, and that she's like making a limited appearance in her own proper persona. She don't need no agent such as some kind of appointed lawyer. Because he is on the side of the judge, and she's going to not be happy with the fact if she has to bring out to the judge and prove to the court that they don't have jurisdiction over her, and there will be reasons why. Because she was not doing anything in driving down the road with her own property, and nobody could restrain her in any kind of way, or much less grab a hold of her and pull her through that window. Now, the woman made one bad mistake, and that is this. If she had cracked that window and she said, "Officer, is this a criminal or a civil investigation?" And she shuts right up.
Hold on. I hear what you're saying, and there's a lot of people teaching this, and you know, I'm not saying that there's no validity to it, but the cops don't understand that. It's only going to escalate.
Wait a minute. Hold on.
Let me just say something here. This is extremely important. People are going to get themselves in trouble. Don't give a cop a hard time. Be polite.
No, she's not giving a cop a hard time.
Well, I told her she shouldn't have done that. She should have rolled her window down. She should have cooperated and give her the number and fight it in the court. Because you know you're going to fight it in the court at the end of the day anyway. Now she's fighting criminal charges in the court. The other one would have been just a violation.
Yes, what, sir. Mr. John, she had perfect right to ask,
I'm not saying that she doesn't have that perfect right. You
I
are,
know, and if she would ask, is this a criminal or civil investigation, and whichever he said, she would tell, she has this right. She said, "You people have got guns. I'm a lady here, and I'm intimidated. Will you please get my sheriff?" This is the problem right here to come
this
to my
is the
aid.
Problem.
Right
this is the problem where people are giving people bad information, and they're getting themselves in trouble. These people, I'll tell you, I don't want to say that. Here's the bottom line on this. When your cop stops you, they're not going to understand anything you're talking about. I'm not saying that you're wrong, because you're right. You are right. But they're not going to understand that. So why bother bringing this situation to escalate to a potential criminal problem? These cops are being taught when people use certain words and say certain things that they're cop killers because they're one of these people that sovereign citizens, they call them. And then they put themselves into jeopardy. And there's been cases where SWAT has been called out to the traffic scene. That escalates it even further. Why go through all that when you know no matter what you do, no matter what you say, no matter how you approach this with the cop, you're still going to end up in court. No matter what happens,
it's a situation where that individual, if she uses really sound, good, respectful rhetoric back to the officer, and when she does, in regard to that, she has that right, and she could ask them officers to drive, escort her to her sheriff to come to his her aid. That's her right.
If the sheriff understands this, that's another thing. I'm telling you right now, why create all the problems and trouble? Why?
She created them because she didn't do what I'm just telling you. She bowed down to them people.
No, this would have taken longer for the same thing. The cops are going to demand, you need to get out of your car and you need to give me this, because they're not going to understand anything you're saying. Look, at National Liberty Alliance does not teach that kind of stuff, because they're only going to get in trouble. That's what's going to happen. Not saying that the argument is not correct. The argument is correct, but the cops do not understand that. They understand what they are told and what their boss requires of them. And that's that. So why fight with the cop? I go and fight with the judge, because the judge should know better. And if he doesn't, then he's going to find himself or herself in federal court for cause. And that's the best way to deal with this problem, if you want to take it to that extent. Sometimes that's not even worth it. I give them $100 and walk away. I mean, that's what I've been doing over the years, you know. But the thing is that I don't want to spend time in jail. But, you know, again, I'm trying to think of the guy's name. What's the... Oh, goodness. Well, go ahead, talking, and I'm thinking of somebody I want to bring up, because they do this all the time, but they get away with it because of who they are and what they know. But go ahead.
Well, anyway, real quickly, because of something else that I think a lot of people listen tonight would really enjoy hearing, my colleague and I, we filed against four different judges in North Carolina a notice of complaint with demand to reinstate danger law. And we put the information there good enough and stated in there, and an alleged judicial district, actually it's 13 is where we put this complaint. And we also come in there and we said it is a demand of we the people that the defendants, and the defendants are the ones that corrupt court up there, correct their de facto color of law practice and yield to their oath of office. And then we reference Article 6 of the United States Constitution. I'm not going to read all this. One other thing that we came immediately with was codified extortion. If people will look up codified extortion, it will plainly tell them what the Supreme Court says, that a statute is not law necessarily, in most cases is not covered or backed up by the Supreme Court. There is codified extortion's issue. Then we also brought a Title 18 U.S.C. Section 242. I'm not going to read all this because we don't have a whole lot of time. But I am telling you.
Again, we went through a lot of that stuff too. But again.
Yes, I know you did. I know you did. And then there's a situation that someone that does these complaints are going to need to come in to your common law courts and get polished up. Then they need to have a statement of facts and demands. And then they need to say give an affidavit of proof filed and colon. And then after the colon, default judgment to be paid to the plaintiff. And for the reasons, and by the way, if they do not answer like Mr. Jerry Apria said earlier, then you file for, easily, you file for default judgment. I got to move on real quickly because we got somebody else there in the queue. You go on through some of these things, and by the way, a lot of people does not know. For example, I and David Russ down here, we filed a document that ascertains to us being a sovereign. And they really don't have no jurisdiction up there in that colored law in Bolivia, which is 20 minutes away from here. And the argument is the sovereign of the people going so as far back as the Magna Carta and then to 1783 to the Treaty of Peace signed by John Adams and Thomas Jefferson stands as the most significant time in American history where the power of the people came from. I'm not going to go all into that. The next thing people ought to see is go in there and study Article 4, Section 4 of the United States Constitution, also the state constitution, of where they're having problems with whoever that officer was and all this. Now,
What you're talking about is an uphill battle, and I'm sure you realize that. And the courts are corrupt. It's really difficult to win. You can win. It's possible, but it's very difficult, and it's very rare. The guy I was trying to think of was Bodnarik. Bodnarik, he teaches a – matter of fact, we have a course that he teaches right here. You know, he put it up on YouTube, so we have that course with Bodnarik where it's an introduction to the Constitution. And now it cost him a lot to be able to drive around without a license plate and without a driver's license. Okay, he spent many days or nights in jail okay? But what happened, eventually he became known because he took him to court and took him to task and did win some cases. And so any of the jurisdictions that he would drive through, they wouldn't bother him no more. But if people are willing to go to jail for all this and make that argument and spend that time, and well, then fine. You know, it's just not worth it. I'd rather argue with the judge, because the bottom line, the worst case, it's only a code violation. But I'm going to tell you, once you argue with a cop, that cop is not going to give up on you. He's not going to let you go. What he's been taught is what he's been taught, and he's going to call for other cops, and they're going to arrest you. And I've seen it over and over again, numerous times, at least three or four times, where people have been arrested for, you know, for assaulting an officer. But it's resisting arrest is where they start. But there is
I
no
understand.
Case. There is no case.
I understand there. Where you're coming from.
Right.
Real quickly, because we do have one person in the queue. When in other words, our argument certainly gets at some point in the case, in the courtroom, and we know how to keep the judge from mandating us to go through that swinging door of the bar. And we then try to challenge him as to the nature of this cause, because I've done nothing wrong, Your Honor. And so failure to obtain substantial justice that might have occurred to some of these people already in state courts leads to suits being filed in federal court under Title 42 United States Code Standard 1983. The suit asks for relief of all orders made in violation of the law, and we're talking about the Supreme Court of United States laws, and that due process of law be allowed and further issues relief.
Are you pursuing this, or you got a case?
Oh yeah, I'm trying to give you some. I'm trying to give
We're aware of the 42 and 18.
Yeah, I know you are, but I'm trying to give this for your audits. I know you know it, and so now let's move right on for one other thing here. Because
the thing is, what you're going through is an uphill battle, and people need to understand, you know, how due process works. And then they have to make the decision on how far they want to take things in an uphill battle. And these cases almost always, I haven't seen a case that made it through yet anyway. Even though they come in with these code violations, these judges rule the things in a way that, you know, for instance, they're sovereign, or they have the ability to do this or that, or whatever the case may be. They always end up throwing it out. Okay. Now you can fight that and take that up the way, but that doesn't mean that you're going to win it. It doesn't mean you're going to get to the Supreme Court either on it. So it is kind of a difficult case to run through.
But I'm leading up, it's late,
and we do have one other person.
I know. Real quickly, this is very important, and I'm leading up to where that person has got themselves in this rinky-dink court. And once they do file, and there's to their motions to reinstate the constitutional articles as a major guide, as I was telling you, along with the judge's oath of office. I get the judge's oath of office, and I get their fidelity bond. And as to knowing who I'm talking with, I don't go in a court case halfway. And I know who I'm talking with, because at that point, that judge realizes that I have the ability to carry him to Judicial Standards Commission in North Carolina, also the Court of Appeals, and right on for violation of due process of law, which is an issue that can easily get you into federal court. Real quickly, there was some mention tonight where some squabbles were going on between officials. I don't know whether the person knows what that is. That's called crime of collusion. Go look this up in Black's Law. That's an issue. All right, now.
Talking about the fraud on the court, which is collusion.
Yes, sir. The fraud in the court is what I want to say now. We're about to close.
It's conspiracy.
Fraud
in the court is
what now?
Go ahead. Finish up.
With the fraud issues, the fraud before the court, and there's also fraud by the court, and that's talking about the court officials. And when that happens, I want you folks to go research two words. I behoove you. It's called void judgment. When you read what void judgment means, it means everything that happened to you in that courtroom, the judge was did not have the status, that there's no jurisdiction there for what the order came that was adverse to you, whether it was, you might call it prejudicial, and trumped up charges, whatever it is. And when it comes down to it, void judgment will give these people the avenue, and that will allow them to then easily go and apply to the federal court for violation of due process law. And a lot of people don't know this. When you get in there under that presumption, it is where the court goes and ascertains that you really were refused under the Fifth Amendment, which is the Constitution, that is right to be able to address and have a hearing in an appropriate court, and that's a court of record.
Okay.
So I want,
all right. Thank
I want
you,
to leave
Dan.
That
we got to move on now because it's midnight.
I know.
We want to get
thank
to the
you,
last caller we've been waiting to try to get to.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Larry, hopefully we're going to be short on this. Go right ahead.
Hi, John. I won't be as long-winded as that guy, but I'll just say that I learned a few things tonight, but I'll just give you something that I learned in a business law class a few years ago because the question came up, and I have the answer. The question was about autograph versus signature.
Mm-hmm.
And this was taught to me by an actual attorney. The difference is an autograph is just you writing your name on something. A signature is intent of mind. For example, if you were brought into court and they said, well, is that your signature on the such and such a contract? Well, a handwriting expert could say, well, that looks like John's handwriting, but they will never say it's your signature because they don't know what your state of mind was when you put
right.
your name
that's
on.
That's a good point, yeah. An autograph, I guess, also would be if you're signing a book. Sometimes people ask me to sign a book, and I guess that would be an autograph then, right?
That is correct, yes.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, it did say signature, but yeah, now it's an intent, so that's a good point. You know, I'm going to look this up in Black's Law because it really should give us some information on that, the difference between signature and autograph.
I'm not going to ask more right now because it was really rather long-winded with some people tonight, so I'll just catch up with you later. But
all right, sounds good, and I'm going to look that up. That's a very interesting point. It makes sense.
All right.
Okay.
Good.
Thank you. Okay, with that, we're going to end things. Goodness, it's midnight. Thanks, everyone, for staying. Quite a few people stayed. And Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. And for those coming to the course, we'll see you on Saturday. Good night.